Chapter 18. Sirius, Burning the Ground. Sirius didn't sleep well that night. Draco was asleep, clearly exhausted, and Harry was curled up around him. Remus was laying on one side of the boys, and Sirius was on the other, protecting the boys and bracketing them in safety. Sirius lay awake, lost in thought as he listened to the steady breaths of his family. They had destroyed 2 Horcruxes. Depending on what had happened with Sivlis and with Dumbledore, there were either 2 left, or all of them were gone. It was possible that Voldemort was vulnerable now. Mortal. Because of Harry, and because of Reggie. Sirius had spent years trying not to think of his brother. He'd thrown himself into forgetting, even before he'd ended up in Azkaban. He had hated himself for failing Regulus, which had turned into hating Reggie, because it had been easier. Because Reggie had given himself to Voldemort. Given himself over to evil. He told himself that his memories of Reggie as a child were wrong, that Reggie had always been a monster beneath the surface. But Creature's story had smashed all those simple, comforting truths to pieces. Regulus had still cared. He'd been brave. It wasn't that he'd run from the Death Eaters. He'd chosen to fight. He'd chosen to destroy Voldemort, knowing he was taking himself there to die, and that they'd never know. And Creature had carried his brother's secret, and what he had taken. Reggie's death hadn't been some desperate, cowardly attempt to flee. Reggie's death. Reggie's life had not been in vain. Sirius was proud of his baby brother, and Reggie would never know that. If nothing else, Sirius decided that he would try to be kinder to Creature. He didn't like the house elf any more than the house elf liked him, but he mattered to Reggie. That meant he mattered to Sirius. Creature had been there for Reggie when Sirius hadn't been, because Sirius had been caught up in having fun with his friends, and escaping and feeling free. He'd left his little brother behind. But then he'd not been much bigger than Draco and Harry were when he'd been sorted into Gryffindor, the only one of the blacks to escape Slytherin. Only a few months older, far too young for their decisions to matter. And these children were innocent. They were just children. Even after everything they'd been through, and everything that Harry could do. They were only children. He'd been a child too. He tried to cry quietly. He'd never been as good at that as Remus, and after a moment Harry's eyes snapped open. He reached out for Sirius, stroking his hair and face the way he did when Sirius was in his dog form. "Good, Sirius," Harry mumbled, quiet so as not to disturb Draco. "Keep safe." Sirius wasn't quite sure if Harry meant that Sirius kept Harry safe, or Harry kept Sirius safe. But either way, he leaned into the touch. It took a moment for him to register that Harry was choosing to touch him when he was human. That Harry had put aside his dislike of contact to comfort Sirius. Harry wasn't like James. He looked a lot like him, and he flew like him. But the brutality he'd been raised with had robbed him of James's cheeky spirit. But there was kindness in this little boy. Sirius nuzzled against his touch and promised to himself, and to the memory of Reggie, that these children would grow up as safe as he could make them, and knowing that both of them were wanted. It was the end of October before Remus got another chance to talk to Snivellus. He left to speak with him, and Sirius wanted to just quietly sit and wait for Remus's return, but the boys needed to have some fun. Harry was certainly brighter without the presence of his notebook, although his writing wasn't as good as it had been. He was still working on communicating, but he was learning, and he seemed to want to talk now, which was progress in and of itself. Draco, meanwhile, seemed to be reading through every single book that he could find, regardless of topic. Given the books that could be found in the Black Library, this was a concern, so Sirius and Remus had tried to get him some new books. Harry had requested another flying race, so Sirius left his vigil by the door to prepare it. He was watching the boys flying in circles when Remus walked in. Remus came straight to him and wrapped him into an embrace. "It's done," Remus whispered. "According to Snape, all the known Horcruxes are destroyed. Dumbledore destroyed a tiara in the school, and Snape found the cup that had been hidden in Bellatrix's vault. We're..." Remus smiled nervously. "I mean, it's not over yet, but it will be over one day. He can be stopped." Sirius had been unable to stop smiling then. Clutching Remus close. He wanted to be out in the world, joining the fight, getting the bastard who'd killed his friends and hurt the children he cared so much for. But he told himself he could let someone else handle that, and focus instead on looking after Harry and Draco. The second Yule that they celebrated together seemed peaceful. Both boys were delighted by their presence and played together in the house, but Sirius was getting impatient. Voldemort was mortal now. How long would it take for someone to kill him? The man was surrounded by Death Eaters, but Sirius still had to hope something would take him out. The boys deserved to go to school, to stop hiding in the shadows. He wanted them to have a normal life, and wanted to be part of it. He wanted to see Harry playing with other children, wanted to know that Draco had access to the Hogwarts library. And yet they were stuck in limbo until someone was able to end the nightmare. But on the cover of the Prophet, the deaths kept coming. Voldemort and his followers seemed to have had no drop in their power. If anything, they were getting bolder. The dark mark burned over the houses of those who tried to resist. Names kept piling up. Bones, Meadows, Dearborn, Vance, McKinnon, Fennec. It was early January when Molly's head appeared in the fireplace while Remus was cooking under Draco's supervision, and Harry was helping. Sirius had been reading through the newspaper when the flames turned green, and she appeared. She sniffled, and Sirius walked over, crouching in front of her.
"Molly!"
"Frank and Alice are..." she sobbed, taking a deep breath, then tried again. "They were tortured. They've been taken to St. Mungo's, but their poor little boy, he saw it." She took another shaking breath, sniffling, and turning to the side. "No, Ginny dear, don't worry, everything is fine. Go and see what Ron and Neville are up to." She looked back at Sirius after a moment. He could tell she was worried. I got two messages for you. I got them yesterday. I've been trying to decide what to do, but I think I should tell you both." She gazed at him uncertain. Is Remus there?"
"He's just cooking."
"Could you get him and Draco, please?" she asked, and Sirius nodded hesitantly.
"Is his mum?"
"It's not that," she promised, and Sirius felt a sudden wave of relief. He didn't particularly care for his cousin, but she'd raised a passable child in difficult circumstances. Regardless, Sirius didn't want Draco to have to suffer the loss of a mother he clearly adored.
"Thank you."
He got to his feet, glancing into the kitchen where Remus was preparing a stew. It smelled delicious.
"That smells great, guys. Molly Weasley's in the flu. She wants to speak to all of us."
She might not have mentioned Harry, but Sirius saw no reason to exclude him. So the four of them made their way back, Draco sitting by the fire with a shawl she'd gifted him on his lap, while Harry rested his head on Draco's shoulder. Sirius and Remus sat beside them. "Thank you, dears," Molly said softly. "I was just telling Sirius. I was asked to pass on two messages. To you, Sirius. Dumbledore said it's time for you to come out. He's sure that the victory is imminent, and he's not been very well. He wants to see you and the boys to discuss next steps. He says he thinks he knows a safer location, one where you'll be able to go outside with the children." She smiled nervously. "I mean, he didn't say this, but I think he might mean the school." Sirius grinned, looking around at the others. Remus looked nervously hopeful, and Harry was clearly just comfortable against Draco. But Draco looked afraid and uncertain. Sirius hoped the boy hadn't developed a fear of stepping outside due to his time locked up. The other message I was asked to pass on was from Snape." She glanced down into the ashes, and Sirius suspected she was reading something. "He said that until things are over, it is better you remain concealed from anyone who might mean harm. He said that all the known Horcruxes are destroyed, but the fight isn't over until... well, until you know who is dead."
"All right."
Sirius made himself smile, angry against Snivellus for wanting to destroy his chance at relative freedom. Snivellus probably loved the chance to be a hero, while keeping Sirius and James's son locked up in a house that was far too small to be the children's entire world.
"Thank you."
"If you need to come by, I'm making some flapjacks this weekend, so..." She gave an encouraging smile. "We've missed you, all of you." We won't be going," Draco said softly. He looked at Harry as he said it. "Harry, we're not allowed to go back to meeting everyone yet." Harry nodded obediently, Sirius felt a sudden flood of anger towards Snivellus, who was taking advantage of Draco's trust in him. He was a little hurt that Draco was going to use Harry against him, but he placed the blame for that one squarely on Snivellus's shoulder. He was the one who decided he'd got to dictate what happened, who manipulated Draco. Draco looked pale and afraid, and Remus hesitated.
"I'm sorry, Molly, but it might be a while. We'll see you as soon as we can," Remus said, smiling sadly.
Molly disappeared from the flames, and Remus turned to Draco.
"What's wrong?"
"I can't," Draco said softly, and then he turned and ran from the room. A moment later, Harry popped out of existence. Sirius could only assume the other boy had summoned Harry to wherever he was hiding, which was kind of a bratty move.
"I can't fucking—" "He was scared," Remus spoke softly.
"Draco was terrified, Pads. I don't get it, but... And we still don't know who wanted to poison Harry. It's not safe yet."
"I hate it here."
"I know." Remus's voice was soft. "I know, and I hate it too. But it isn't safe yet. We'll see what Draco got told, but..."
"Okay, let's go find the little brats anyway,"
Sirius muttered, morphing into Pupfoot to sniff them out. The boys were in the library again, Draco reading books that he definitely shouldn't have been able to reach, books that Sirius had intentionally put on higher shelves, books about dark magic. A quick glance showed he was studying Horcruxes, which was definitely not an appropriate topic for a 10-year-old.
"Draco, what is it?"
Draco shook his head, looking up at them, and Sirius felt a little sick, because Draco looked terrified of them at that moment, more frightened than he'd been since that first night. Sirius didn't understand what Snivellus had said, but he wanted to punch the other man, because whatever hidden message had been there, it had scared Draco senseless.
"You won't be in any trouble," Remus started,
but Draco shook his head again, reaching his hand out for Harry. "Please don't make us go there," Draco begged, and Sirius could have cried because Draco had been so excited to go to Hogwarts when he was younger and had only refused for Harry's sake. To see him frightened now was awful, and it didn't make sense. There was no reason for him to be afraid.
"Do you know who poisoned Harry?"
Remus asked softly, and Draco shook his head.
"Do you know why?"
Remus tried again, and Draco's response was to curl up into a tiny ball with his hands over his face, shaking. Remus and Sirius exchanged glances. It was clear that he knew, and that he didn't want to say.
"You can trust us," Remus told him, voice as kind and patient as he could make it. "You know we're never going to let anything hurt either of you, right? You're safe here."
Draco didn't answer, and Harry curled up over him, protecting him.
Shall we finish making dinner?"
Remus asked quietly.
"You don't have to tell us now, Draco. But when you're ready, we can help. Whatever's wrong, just let us help."
Draco stayed silent for the rest of the evening, gazing at the two of them with fear in his eyes. He and Harry retreated to their room almost as soon as Draco had eaten. And when Sirius went to see if the boys wanted a bedtime story, he found that the door to their bedroom had vanished. The next few days were horrific, reminding Sirius of when they had first arrived. Draco kept his gaze on the floor, refusing to speak, and Harry seemed to have picked up on Draco's anxiety and was speaking almost entirely his parcel tongue. At one point, Sirius morphed into a dog and tried to get a cuddle, but was refused. At night, he cuddled up against Remus and tried to work out what was wrong.
"I don't get what... Snape said all the Horcruxes are gone. It's over, near enough," Sirius argued.
Remus sighed, slender fingers trailing down his spine and skimming over old scars.
"He said something about people meaning Harry harm, though. I think Draco's frightened someone in the Order wants to hurt Harry. If it was just the other lot, Snape would have said that." "But we're not going to. Surely the kids know we won't hurt them," Sirius whined,
nuzzling at Remus's shoulder.
"I think Draco's just... He's just worried, that's all," Remus sighed. "We'll talk to them. Tell them that we're on their side, not anyone else's."
Sirius sat up.
"The cloak. What about it? Snivellus. Snape said it would prove what side he was on. What if he didn't mean that he was acting against the Death Eaters? What if he's acting against the Order? He's not working for the Death Eaters, Pads. You know that. I know you hate him, but...
No. Sirius stared at Remus, still sprawled on their bed.
He's not working for the Death Eaters, I know that. But that's not what... He's working on our side. Not the Order. He knows that someone wants Harry dead. That's why he told us not to come back. And he's...
Fuck. He's on our side.
We must stay quiet for a moment, thinking it through.
Harry had been the target of the poisoning, and Snape's message was warning them that danger still existed. Snape had left the room before Harry was poisoned. Snape was the potioneer. Draco had only been able to save Harry because of what Snape had given him. The Slytherin freak that Sirius had hated since they were both the boy's age, who hated him and James just as much. He was trying to protect Harry.
He went against Dumbledore asking us to come back, Sirius murmured.
I think, Remus swallowed, I think he went against Dumbledore at the start, when he let me know Harry was alive.
If Dumbledore knew. Dumbledore conjured the apple juice, Sirius pointed out, wondering if it was somehow Dumbledore that Snape was protecting them from.
Draco and Tonks drank the apple juice, Remus argued. Anyway, why would he want Harry hurt?
Harry's powerful, Sirius answered.
It didn't seem possible, but if Dumbledore thought he couldn't be controlled, maybe that could have motivated him to do it.
No, Remus said softly. I met him when he sat me down for a game of gobstones, after 6 years of my family desperately trying to hide me from the world. He never showed any fear of me, of what I was.
He wouldn't kill a child for having power, Sirius.
He wouldn't.
Remus's voice cracked a little with emotion, and Sirius leaned down and kissed him.
All right. I know he... I know. Okay. So it wasn't him, but... Snape's still trying to protect us.
Fuck.
Maybe we can calm Draco down by telling him that Snape's helping us. I just wish he'd tell us what's wrong.
He will, in time, Remus promised.
Remus was right that Draco needed time, although it was almost 3 weeks before the boy gave in. The 3 weeks in question were deeply stressful. Draco was jumpier than ever, reading and hiding behind Harry, and refusing to speak most of the time. Harry had clearly worked out something was wrong, even if he didn't know what, and kept looking at Sirius as though he'd been the one to upset things. It was getting late in the evening. Draco had been reading in the library all day. Harry had suffered two episodes, one in the morning, and the others, it was getting dark. He had covered his eyes and screamed desperately before collapsing and whimpering against Draco. The sound of him starting to scream again made Sirius flinch. He was on his feet instantly, racing to be there for him. They couldn't help Harry during an episode, but they could at least comfort him afterwards. By the time he reached the bedroom, Draco had already managed to blindfold Harry, whose screams quickly subsided into sobs. Draco carefully removed the blindfold, wrapping his arms around Harry and mumbling to him.
It's okay. It's safe here, Harry. It's...
He looked up at Sirius and Remus and squared his tiny shoulders.
You won't hurt Harry, will you?
Of course not.
Not ever?
Draco asked, and there was seriousness in his eyes.
Even if it be good if you hurt him.
Sirius growled a little.
We're not hurting either of you kids, no matter what.
Draco leaned in, and Harry lifted his head, looking at Sirius. His eyes flashed golden, and Sirius had the strangest sensation of something being inside his mind for the space of a breath, then gone again. Harry nodded, and Draco looked up at them.
I need your help.
Okay.
Sirius sat down on the edge of the bed, while Remus crawled over a chair and settled next to him.
What is it, kid?
I can't work out how to fix it,
Draco said softly, slumped a little under feet.
But I know what's happening. I know why someone wants to stop Harry being here, and I know why the Dark Lord can see through Harry's eyes, but I haven't found out how to fix it.
The kid sounded pretty fucking broken at that.
Okay.
Sirius kept his voice calm and level.
You want to tell me?
Harry's a Horcrux, Draco whispered. He's why the Dark Lord is strong. He's why they can't. It's why someone poisoned him.
Draco looked up at them, and Sirius knew the child was waiting to hear if Harry was going to die because of what Draco had told them. He looked at Remus, who was clearly focused.
Snape said all known Horcruxes, Remus said, when he felt up to speaking. All known. That was the wording he used.
Draco nodded, looking up at them.
Please don't hurt him.
We won't hurt either of you, Sirius promised.
In all of the fact, Draco tried to keep that secret.
You're safe. You don't have to worry about this on your own, Remus promised the two of them.
I can't find any books on how to fix him, but I'm sure Severus is looking too. If we could talk to him.
Draco looked hopeful though, trusting. He thought they would be able to fix it, and Sirius didn't want to disillusion him, but he was sure that if Draco couldn't find an answer, he couldn't either. Remus was smart, though.
We'll work it out, don't worry. Remus got the top grade in our year in defence against the dark arts, and anyway, we'll keep you safe. If we have to run, we'll run. No one is going to hurt Harry.
That reassurance seemed to settle the boys, and they cuddled up to sleep. By an unspoken agreement, Sirius and Remus stayed in their room that night, Remus transfiguring the chair into a second bed. Sirius lay awake all night, trying to think of a solution. There had to be a way to save Harry without dooming everyone. He was determined to find it. But at the same time, he was aware that if it came down to it, if he really had to choose between Harry's life and defeating Voldemort, Harry would win. He owed it to Lily and James, but more than that, he owed it to Harry. They'd have to talk to Snape. He fucking hated the idea, but it seemed to be the only solution. And Harry's safety mattered more than his pride. He looked over at Harry, trying to see the fragment of Voldemort's soul that was tainting the child. There was nothing there. Nothing dark or evil. Just the scared little boy clinging to his best friend. He wanted Draco to be wrong. He desperately, desperately wanted Draco to be wrong. But it made too much sense. It explained how Voldemort had treated Harry. How Harry behaved. Even the fact that Harry had been gifted Draco. Voldemort wasn't indulging Harry. He was giving part of his soul a toy. And yet Harry wasn't Voldemort. That was so obvious he couldn't understand why apparently other people couldn't tell them apart. Why someone would be willing to kill Harry for Voldemort's sins. Sirius didn't entirely know what he was going to say to Snape. He was certainly going to be more blunt about the whole thing than Snape was. He was not going to indulge in the Slytherin doublespeak that Draco and Snape could manage, and which Remus could vaguely piece together. The fact was, Snape was helping them. And even if he didn't like the man, he understood it was important to get this right. The days were drifting slowly into March, and Remus hadn't been able to find a solution. He'd tried. He'd looked through everything in the library, but he was having no more luck than Draco. The simple facts were that first, Horcruxes were mostly considered more myth than actual objects. And secondly, the focus had always been on destroying the soul or else reuniting it with the larger whole. No one had ever considered that someone might want to preserve the object itself rather than destroy it. And no one had ever considered that the object in question could be alive. Draco at least seemed calmer now that his burden was shared, and the improvement on his mood seemed to have also helped Harry. Draco was sitting cross-legged on the floor, gazing at Harry, who was sitting opposite him, and looking at the chessboard that Sirius had found in Reggie's room. As Sirius walked closer, he heard some of the chess pieces complain.
"He's awful! He made me go diagonal!" one of the rooks was complaining. "I can't go diagonal!"
"I know, I know,"
Draco said softly, reaching out and gently patting the rook.
"I'm trying to teach him. You just need to be patient."
"But I'm enchanted, so I can't go diagonal,"
the rook was protesting. Harry looked up at Sirius and rolled his eyes, and Sirius found himself grinning. The fire turned green, and then Snape's voice echoed from it.
"Let me in, Black. I can't talk here."
There was a moment's pause, and then Sirius dropped the wards over the flue. Snape stepped out of the flames, nodding a greeting to Draco, and then looking over at Sirius.
"You've got to go now. You've got 10 minutes at most."
"What?"
"They suspect Molly Pruitt knows where you are. Her older children are at school. She sent the younger ones to stay with Neville on a playdate. She's alone in the house, and they will not hesitate to torture her until she gives up what she knows. Out! Now!"
Draco stared up at Sirius in fear. Remus was already on his feet. Boys, come on! Stuff in the trunk! I can shrink it so we can carry it. He hurried the boys from the room as quickly as possible. Sirius was furious that Snape could have abandoned Molly. He knew now that Snivellus was on his side, but he didn't fucking act like it sometimes.
What do you suggest we do? Where do you suggest we go? I don't want to know that, Snape answered. I'm giving you a warning first. Then I'll tell her she can give in, and maybe that'll save her life. But it's important to keep Harry away from them. Nothing else matters. I know he's a Horcrux, Sirius snarled. So don't pretend to care about Harry. If you did, you'd have told us how to fix him. I don't know how, Sirius. Get out!
With that, Snape returned to the flames. Sirius hated the thought of leaving the home that had kept them safe for over a year. The home that meant they had a chance after everything. The Death Eaters would surely destroy it. But they were alive, and that was what was important. They grabbed what was needed. It didn't take long to pack up what mattered most. Not when every second they lingered posed the danger. Creature accompanied them so that he didn't have to face what would happen when the enemy arrived at the front door. Draco blindfolded Harry, and Sirius and Remus embraced the boys and apparated them away. They were in a forest. Sirius hadn't known where to go, other than as far from London as he could, so he ended up taking them to the Forest of Dean. Harry started screaming and covering his eyes in the blindfold. After a few moments, he ended up crying on Draco's shoulder, still blindfolded. Draco was trying to calm him down, but looked up at Sirius and Remus in fear. "We're okay," Remus said softly. "We'll find a way to keep running."
"They're looking for us. Maybe we can go aboard."
"They'll be watching the ports," Remus murmured, "and it's too far to apparate. We've got the tent, and we can find places. We can run." Sirius nodded. They were outside, but that wasn't a comfort, not now. Not when there was nowhere safe for them. He couldn't contact Molly. Couldn't find out if she survived unless it made the papers. Couldn't ask the Order for help because at least some of them wanted Harry dead. He didn't think a tent was safe from a pack of Death Eaters. Didn't think anywhere was. "I know some places we can go," Remus said after a moment, watching the boys cling to each other. "At least for now." He held out his hands. They took them and again the world faded. They found themselves in a derelict Muggle-style house, some distance away from any others, with barred windows and a door with strong locks. Remus looked a little pale, and it took a moment for Sirius to understand.
"You lived here?"
he asked, and Remus nodded. "Dad plotted it to be unplottable, and to repel Muggles. He..." Remus laughed nervously. He rather feared that if anyone saw the basement, they might call the police. Sirius reached out and squeezed his hand, wishing it hadn't come to this. The next couple of days were spent cleaning the house to make it livable and trying to ensure the children were comfortable. There was a garden, which was good at least. After so long inside, it was wonderful to be able to let the boys stretch their legs. But Harry was still having episodes, and Draco was afraid, carrying his shawl everywhere so that by touching it he could keep Molly safe. On the third day, Sirius snuck out early in the morning, making his way to Hogsmeade by apparition. He searched through the bins in his Padfoot form and returned with a copy of the Daily Prophet. "Draco," he called,
"Molly's alive. She's in hospital, but she's alive and recovering."
Draco clambered up to look at the paper, running his fingers over the printed words. "Can we put this somewhere safe, please?" Draco asked, and Sirius nodded, carefully cutting out the article and handing it over to Draco, who stored it in his bag with his mum's letter. Sirius hated the situation, but he realised Snape had probably saved the lives of the four of them, and Molly. Remus spent some time visiting the other safe houses with Creature to check their condition, but in the end he decided this was their best bet for now. There was no point in moving between them unless a warning came, and there was no way of contacting the Order, no one they could trust. It was a warm summer that year. The boys played out in the garden most days, enjoying the relative freedom. Draco requested a picnic for his birthday, and they ate a picnic outside. They had another picnic celebrating the second year they spent as a family, and a third for Harry's birthday. Sirius knew that soon the boys should have been off to school, that they should have been free to start new lives, to have a chance to learn their magic. And they didn't have that, not while it still wasn't safe. He and Remus tried to find an answer to the Horcrux problem. Draco brewed Wolfsbane. They set up wards around the property for any potential danger,
and Sirius mourned the life that the boy should have had. The 1st of September arrived, and Harry and Draco weren't on the Hogwarts Express the way their parents had been at their age. They weren't off to start their new magical lives together. They were still prisoners, still hidden in a desperate attempt to keep them alive. And Sirius hated that they were stuck. Draco seemed to know the significance of the date, but he didn't voice any objection, just stuck close to Harry and kept quiet. "Snape will be working on a way to help," Remus promised every time Sirius got too vocal about his upset. But it didn't matter because he knew it wasn't going to work. There was nowhere for them to go that was safer than this. Until there was a solution, all they could do was try and keep the children safe and sane. That wasn't easy. There was barely a day that passed without one of Harry's episodes. Voldemort seemed to be pushing to see through Harry's eyes, to understand where he was. Harry was resisting, but he might not last. His resistance was clearly taking a toll on him. October 23rd was the night of a full moon. Remus had drawn up a timetable for the boys, helping them to cover the material they should have been learning at Hogwarts. Draco was a fast learner, and Harry's magic still didn't behave the way that magic should. He was still producing sweets from nowhere, still animating whatever he found. Thankfully, there were no more animal skeletons on the property. He'd got more powerful than ever before, though, and he could use his staff to control it a little better each day. There were craters in the garden from Harry's magic, but that was all right. They meant he was practicing. It was a long way from perfect, but it was all they could give them. Sirius curled up against Remus in the basement that night. The Wolfsbane potion worked, but he knew Remus appreciated the extra layer of protection for his family, just in case something were to happen that meant he posed a risk. Sirius had charms up to alert him of any problems with the boys, but they slept peacefully. In fact, for the first time in 3 weeks, Harry didn't have an episode, and instead slept calmly through until the morning. Sirius made pancakes for everyone, whilst Remus flopped on the couch, exhausted as always after a transformation. Harry was sitting in the armchair. Draco curled up to fit beside him. Both boys looked tired, and Sirius was glad that it was a Sunday, so there was no pressure for them to do anything more than relax. He passed out plates of pancakes, Draco carefully cutting his as Harry tore his up with his fingers. It was progress from when he tried to eat them whole, so that was still something.
"Thank you, Sirius," Draco said quietly, adding a spoonful of jam to his plate.
"Thank. Good, Sirius," Harry agreed with an enthusiastic nod, cuddling up against Draco more and reaching for some of Draco's jam.
"Harry, no,"
Draco sighed, spooning some jam onto Harry's plate as well. And for a while, the room was quiet, other than the sounds of contented eating. Harry wiggled happily where he sat.
"Draco, chess later? Or garden later? Or book later? Maybe garden, then chess. I can read us a story before bed."
"Thank." Harry smiled contentedly and took another bite of pancake. Remus yawned and Sirius contemplated sending him back to bed when there was a sudden sharp knock on the door of the safe house. Sirius grabbed his wand, getting to his feet hesitantly. He was halfway to the door when it smashed apart, slivers of wood slicing through the air. Harry threw up a shield, and for a moment the four of them seemed to be frozen. The wooden pieces clattered down onto the carpet. Sirius was closest to the door. He could see the man standing there, red eyes glowing. He went to scream for the others to leave, but no sound emerged. The man simply smiled and stepped closer.
You've been listening to More Powerful Than Experience, written by Flight and Flame, and read by Rebu Pye. Thank you for listening.
Chapter 19. Harry. The Battle at Malfoy Manor. Harry had thrown up a shield the moment that something had felt wrong. He could run. He knew he could run, and his Draco was beside him, so he could take his Draco with him, but he couldn't reach the adults. Then the door had split, and it had rained pieces of wood. And Harry felt afraid because his lord was standing there, watching. His lord walked into the room looking around curiously. Sirius Dad and Remus Dad were both clearly panicked, and his Draco was trembling strangely where he was sitting, his body pressed to Harry's. Sirius Dad was the first to move, taking a step closer, and a wave of his lord's hand sent Sirius Dad crashing against the wall, his body limp. There was red coming out from his head, and Harry was scared about that, but he could see Sirius Dad was still breathing. Remus Dad's hand was shaking,
Harry knew that if he tried to do something, his lord would strike Remus Dad down. He made Remus Dad still, so he could breathe, but his legs and arms wouldn't work. He did the same to Sirius Dad, because they were safer that way. Harry tried to think of how to use his magic to make it better. He knew he could. He could see other figures back behind his lord, and he didn't want to go with them. The woman laughed, and it was a bad noise. He thought of all the times she'd laughed when he'd hurt people, when he made them leak red and scream and fall still. Beside her was the wolf, and he remembered the time his filthy fingers had left scratches on his Draco's arm. They shouldn't have been here, because this was somewhere he was safe. Harry! His lord spoke to him, stepping forwards again.
You've been very difficult to track now.
Go! Harry hissed in reply, clutching at his Draco's arm, feeling the brand under his fingertips. Leave us!
Harry, you know I can't leave you. You're important, and you will be coming with me.
There was a nasty light to his lord's red eyes.
If you come now, I'll let you keep your pet.
Draco is mine, Harry protested. He wanted to fight, but another of his lord's men, one of the ones that was often with the woman, had paused by Sirius Dad. The woman strode forwards, lifting up Sirius Dad's hair, and then slamming it back against the wall.
Stop!
Harry screamed, and the woman laughed again, and Harry reached out with his magic and stopped her, moving her away with a flick of his wrist. She crumpled like a dropped doll, and the one of his lord's men besides her helped her to her feet. She wasn't allowed to hurt Sirius Dad or Remus Dad or anyone here. He got up and ran to Sirius Dad, stopping her from hurting him more.
Harry.
His lord spoke coldly, his voice full of anger, and Harry was scared because he'd got rid of him before, but he felt different now.
Next time, you will behave.
It was like being frozen, or trying to run through thick mud as Harry realized his mistake. Because he had run to Sirius Dad and left his Draco behind. His lord had reached his Draco and grabbed his arm far too tightly. And then he was gone with his Draco, and the others went with him. There was a weak groan from Sirius Dad. Harry rushed to him, pressing his fingers to Sirius Dad's hair to try and heal his hurt.
Harry!
Sirius Dad asked, sounding all funny and like he couldn't breathe properly.
Are you hurt?
I'm fine! Harry promised.
Are you still hurt? We've got to get to Draco. Please.
Harry, you've got to calm down, Remus Dad was saying, but he couldn't be calm, not when his lord and the others had his Draco. His Draco needed him, and they might hurt him.
Where's Draco?
Sirius Dad asked, and Harry wanted to scream or cry or make something explode. He spotted his Draco's wand on the floor. His Draco must have dropped it. That was good. His Draco was smart. His lord had always said his Draco wasn't allowed any magic, that he would be punished if he had used it, and his Draco was clever enough to drop his wand so it wouldn't be found.
We need a plan, Remus Dad said, but that wouldn't work.
They needed to get there now.
He'll hurt Draco! We have to go now!
Harry begged, and the adults stared at him without understanding. Harry screamed because they couldn't understand him. And that was bad because he wanted to get to his Draco now, but he couldn't find him, and his Draco needed them to find him. He could find his Draco if his Draco pressed on the brand, otherwise he couldn't track him down.
What happened, Harry?
Sirius Dad asked as he tried to sit up. He was shaking again, and that was bad. Harry didn't like that.
He took my Draco, Harry explained. He took him, and he is going to hurt him because I left. But I left because he was going to hurt him.
Harry.
Sirius Dad grabbed his shoulder. Harry wanted to hurt him, but he didn't want Sirius Dad hurt. He just didn't want to be grabbed.
I need you to breathe and speak in English, please.
Took Draco, Harry gasped out. Bad.
He is bad. We'll try and get Draco back, but...
Harry bad,
Harry whispered, his voice cracking a little.
I ran away and was bad, and now he's going to hurt my Draco, and...
Harry, it's... We'll find a way to contact Snape. We'll work out something. Just stay with us, okay? You can't go running into danger. We'll sort this.
Took Draco,
Harry protested.
He'll hurt him. We have to get him. We have to...
I know, Sirius Dad was saying.
And Remus Dad was nodding, casting charms around. Harry knew they were wards, but they had wards before. He didn't know where the wards had gone, but maybe if there'd been a lot of his lord's men, they would have been able to take down the wards.
Need to get my Draco,
Harry pleaded.
Sirius Dad looked at him. You can't go and face them on your own, Harry. If something happens, you have to tell us. Do you understand?
Harry nodded. He understood. But he wasn't going to do what they were saying, because his lord's men would be able to hurt Sirius Dad and Remus Dad too. He realised that Remus Dad was trembling where he stood, and it looked like he was crying. Sirius Dad walked over and wrapped his arms around Remus Dad, leaning in to murmur softly and rub his back.
They want him alive, Mooney. They're not going to let Greyback near him, Sirius Dad said.
And Remus Dad cried more and still tried to cast wards. But it wasn't enough. Then Sirius Dad called for Creature and asked Creature to find his Draco and come back to tell them where he was without being seen by his lord or any of them. They sat together. Occasionally, Sirius Dad would try to do something like go and get a glass of water, and Remus Dad would do it for him because he was hurt. It was quiet, and Harry didn't like the quiet, not when he didn't have his Draco to cuddle. He was scared because he didn't want to have to sleep in his bed without his Draco. He hadn't had to do that since they left where they were before.
You need to stay with us, Harry, Sirius Dad kept saying.
But then Harry felt it, the warm brush of his Draco's magic against his mark. Draco was calling for him. Sirius Dad and Remus Dad would try and stop him going, and he couldn't let them. He made them stop moving. They could breathe and blink, but not walk or chase him. He stood up and looked at them.
I'll come back with my Draco, he promised. Sirius safe, Remus safe.
He picked up his staff, nodded to himself, closed his eyes and went to his Draco. The first thing Harry saw was that they were back in the big room with the table where he used to play with his Draco. He automatically looked towards their corner, half expecting to find that his Draco was there waiting for him in pretty robes, and all of what had happened was just a dream, as though Sirius Dad and Remus Dad weren't real. But his Draco was standing in front of the fire, with his lord standing behind him. Several of his lord's men were standing around. His Draco was staring at the floor, and Harry was worried he didn't realise Harry was here. One of his lord's men, who had grey eyes and yellow-white hair like his Draco, but didn't look like his Draco at all, pointed his wand towards his Draco.
Crucio!
His Draco screamed, his body arching and shaking and falling to the ground. Harry took a step forward and waved his hand to get rid of the table that was blocking his Draco from his sight. It collapsed to the ground as a pile of dust. He took another step forwards, hearing his Draco scream, and he turned his attention to the man who was casting the spell. He stopped him. The man crumpled to the ground, his head twisting away so that he wouldn't look at his Draco any more. His Draco curled up in a ball, panting, and Harry rushed to his Draco, dropping his staff, pressing his hand on him to heal the bruises he could see. His Draco was shaking in his arms.
Harry!
His lord spoke, waving his hand.
You know you aren't meant to kill without permission.
His lord's voice was surprisingly calm, and Harry looked up to find his lord gazing down at him. He wanted to take his Draco and run, but there was something that felt wrong. His Draco looked up at him, grey eyes shining.
Harry!
His voice was little more than a whisper.
Harry, get out! Harry, you've got to run!
Harry felt that there were wards over his Draco. It took a moment for him to decipher them, but what he found made him want to scream. Any attempt at taking his Draco with him would cut him apart.
Go, Harry!
His Draco pleaded, and he was still shaking. Harry knew he couldn't let go of him, couldn't leave because if he left, then they hurt his Draco. His lord waved his wand, and his Draco fell silent, but his hand squeezed Harry's. His lord gazed down at the two of them with a look of cruel satisfaction on his face.
Harry, you have returned to me. I knew you would. Knew that all of this unpleasantness was simply a child's rebellion. You must have known, Harry, that we would be reunited, that I would not let you go. The only question is whether I continue to indulge you with your pet. Tell me, was it his idea you leave?
There was a chill in his lord's gaze, and Harry didn't know which answer would mean his Draco wasn't hurt again.
Well, Harry?
His lord reached down, pressing a finger to the mark on Harry's head, and it hurt. It always hurt if his lord touched his skin. It always felt like a burning pain that he hated, but he knew he had to endure if that was what his lord wanted. He made himself hold still and made himself focus on cradling his Draco close.
Let him go, Harry said quietly, feeling his Draco twitch a little in his arms.
His Draco was still silent, but he was looking up in terror, clutching Harry's hand.
Let him go back to the others.
Harry, I'm not a fool. I have never been a fool for all you treat me as one.
If I let him leave, you will run to him.
Perhaps there will be other children.
Severus was right. It helps you to have a companion.
It keeps you focused. And once you remember what has happened to this boy, you will not try and run again.
His lord laughed, and it was an awful sound. Some of his lord's men were laughing as well. His Draco was still clinging to Harry's hand, still desperately holding on to him, even silenced as he was. His lord gazed down at his Draco, eyes brilliant red.
Crucio.
Harry wrapped around his Draco, feeling the magic strike him, and he screamed. But he twisted the magic around them, making a shield for them both. He couldn't move his Draco, so he'd have to protect him here.
Harry, stop this little show,
his lord beguiled.
You can keep him after he has been punished, if you come to me now.
Harry was reluctant to pull away, but he stumbled to his feet, forcing his Draco to let go of his hand. He was going to miss Sirius Dad and Remus Dad and Fly, and not having to hurt people. But he would have his Draco. His lord pointed his wand at his Draco, flicking it as he spoke.
Septum Semper.
Red poured from his Draco's back, and Harry screamed, the windows of the room shattering.
Save the boy if you must, Severus,
his lord instructed, and one of his lord's men rushed to his Draco, casting charms which seemed to slow the flow of red.
My Draco!
Harry hissed, walking forwards, the ash on the ground lifting up into the air, forming a shield around his Draco and the man that was healing him.
You hurt my Draco! You wanted to stop my Draco!
Because you disobeyed, Harry. Because you did not listen to me.
His lord still had his wand, and a flex of Harry's fingers caught his staff to him. He wrapped his fingers around the wood, feeling it ground his magic. He sent a bolt of power towards his lord and made him stumble. His lord's gaze grew angry, and a sharp blast shot towards them.
Stop this,
his lord ordered, and Harry knew if he stopped, then his Draco would be hurt again, because he hadn't listened. Harry focused on holding the shield. His Draco was safe as long as the shield lasted. He did not think that his lord would let his Draco be his if the shield fell. So he kept his staff on the cold stone of the floor and kept the shield strong, even as he sent his power towards his lord. Several of his lord's men joined the fight. He saw bursts of colour, felt their spells strike him, but he swatted them away like flies. They crumpled like broken toys against the walls, and the floor, and the ceiling. All that mattered was holding the shield and keeping his lord from getting to his Draco. His lord sent a burst of green light towards the shield, and Harry knew what the light did, knew it made people stop, and he wouldn't let his Draco be stopped.
My Draco! You do not hurt my Draco!
Harry hissed, and he knew he was angry, knew that there was fire and blood and dust around them. But none of it mattered. Nothing other than keeping that shield strong. His lord would hurt his Draco. His lord would not stop until his Draco was gone. Then he'd get another child, and he'd do the same to them. Harry couldn't let that happen. His lord raised his wand again, and Harry stepped into the path of his spell, focusing all of his power. He rocked his staff forwards, dropping the shield and throwing all of his power into destroying his lord. There was a flash of green light coming towards Harry, and his lord's body fell broken to the ground as the spell struck and everything went silent. It was foggy. It was foggy and Harry couldn't see anything. He didn't like that, so he closed his eyes and concentrated.
When he opened them again, it looked like Sirius's dad's house. The house he and his Draco flew in. Only if it was cleaner and tidier. He looked down at himself, and he was wearing his favourite T-shirt, which had a dog on it and some jeans, and he wasn't wearing shoes. He could see he was standing on carpet, but he couldn't feel the carpet beneath his feet. "Hello, Harry," a woman's voice said, and he saw her walking down the stairs. She looked a bit like Mrs. Weasley, only taller and prettier. She smiled at him and went to hold out her arms for a cuddle,
but then dropped them by her sides.
"You did wonderfully, kiddo,"
a male voice this time, and it was a man who Harry thought looked familiar. It took a moment to work out why. These were Sirius Dad's friends, the ones in the picture. The ones that his lord had killed. He was sad that Sirius Dad didn't have his friends any more. The woman reached the bottom of the stairs, and the man came and stood beside her, holding her hand. The two of them looked at him, and their expressions were funny. They looked either sad or very happy. Looking at their hands holding each other, it reminded Harry of him and his Draco, how his Draco's pearl fingers fitted against his. They crouched down so that they were his height, and the man smiled sadly.
"You've been so brave, Harry. You don't need to fight any more."
"Is my Draco going to be okay?" Harry asked, because he didn't know where he was, and he didn't know where his Draco was, or if he'd ever see him again, but he hoped that he'd be safe. "He will be," the woman promised, and she looked sad. Harry hated that he was making Sirius Dad's friend sad. It took a moment for him to realize they understood him.
"You can speak parcel tongue?"
He stared at her curiously. "No, but we can understand you, Harry. Here we can understand you. You've..." She shook her head. "I'm sorry we couldn't keep you safe, my darling." He looked at her and thought of how much happier Sirius Dad was when he got a cuddle when he was sad. Carefully, he walked over and gave her a hug, and then hesitantly hugged the man as well, and then stepped back again. "Sirius Dad and Remus Dad keep me safe, and I have my Draco." The man nodded, his movement a little stiff.
"It's over, Harry. You did it. Voldemort is gone now. You can stay here, if you want.
You can stay here with us and be safe."
"Will my Draco come here?"
"No, he won't. Not for long, well. If you want to see him, you can go home,"
the woman promised, and the man nodded.
"You destroyed the Horcrux that was in you, Harry," he said quietly. "You want to go back, don't you?"
Harry nodded quickly. He wanted to go back to the others, to his Draco and Sirius Dad and Remus Dad. He looked up at them, wondering if he could do that, if they could find a way so he could go home. The woman smiled at him, but it was a sad smile again. "You be careful. It won't be easy. You're hurt, very hurt. And you're powerful, but you'll need time to recover. It won't be easy."
"But you won't be alone," the man promised. "Sirius and Remus, tell them they're doing a good job, okay? Tell them we're
proud," the woman finished, "of them and of you. And Harry, that boy, look after him. You're going to need each other more than you know."
Harry nodded, looking around, and the house they were in seemed to be disappearing and fading back into the room he and Draco played in.
"We'll watch over you, Harry," the woman said softly.
"Over all of you," the man said.
And they were gone, and he was lying in the room where he and his lord had fought. He heard sobbing and looked up to find his Draco cradled on the arms of one of his lord's men. He tried to push the man away from his Draco with his magic, but he felt too weak, and a soft groan escaped him instead. His Draco gasped and ran to him, throwing his arms around Harry's neck. Harry could see there was red on his Draco, and he knew his Draco hated being dirty, but he didn't seem to care. He was just clinging to Harry and sobbing, and Harry felt very sleepy, but he cuddled back as best as he could.
You've been listening to More Powerful Than Experience, written by Flight and Flame, and read by Bobby Pye. Thank you for listening.
Chapter 20. Lupin. Finding Family. Remus stared at Sirius. The two of them were frozen, unable to move from where they were, stuck in place. Sirius looked pale and as exhausted as he felt, muscles cramping from being held in one position for far too long. Creature would be able to help. He was sure of that. House elves' magic worked differently. But the longer it took Creature to find them, the longer the boys were in danger. Harry's power couldn't be bested. The simple fact was that the little boy was simply too strong. If he wanted to hold them in place, then they would be held. Their wishes wouldn't change that, nor would any of their magic. Creature might be able to free them, but he was alone in that. If Remus had been able to speak, he would have tried to convey that to Sirius. Creature would come to free them and stop the fear, the horror, that they could be stuck like this for far too long. And then, like a thread being cut, the magic was gone. They crumpled to the floor. Sirius whined, but Remus's mind was racing. He knew what it meant that he was free. Looking at Sirius's face, he could see the moment that the other man realized as well. For a second, it looked as though he would break, as though he would curl up and start sobbing and never ever stop. But a moment later, he was scrambling up to his feet, head held high.
"Draco might still be alive," Sirius whispered.
And Remus nodded and reached for his hand, letting Sirius help him to his feet. Because that was the truth of it. Harry was gone. The brilliant, chaotic, messy child who'd fought so hard to be kind had passed. But there was another boy out there that needed them. They couldn't mourn, couldn't stop fighting until they knew what had become of him. That little boy could be out there somewhere, and he needed them to be looking for him and finding a way to bring him home. Remus fought down a wave of terror when he thought of those that Draco had been with when he left. He knew finding Draco might mean facing his nightmares. But he owed it to the boy, and to Harry, to try. He picked up Draco's wand, shoving it into a pocket. Draco should have his wand when they find him, whether he was alive or not. Draco should have his wand. Sirius's arms wrapped around him for a moment, and then there was a sharp crack.
"Master Sirius, Creature has found Miss Sissy's boy."
Creature's voice cut through the silence that had surrounded them. "Alive?" Sirius asked.
"Yes, injured, but alive."
Creature glanced down for a moment.
"Only Miss Sissy's boy."
"Can you take us to him?" Remus asked, his voice far calmer than he felt. For once, Creature didn't object and simply held out his hands. Remus took one of them, looking at the house elf and expecting him to complain about filthy half-breeds or about Sirius. But he just gripped tight and took them to their boys. Harry's body lay limp on the floor, and Draco was cradled around him, sobbing. Draco's emerald robes were soaked in blood and dirt, and his face was streaked with it. Sirius morphed into his padfoot form and raced to the boy, as Remus drew his wand and started to search for any traps, trying to create some kind of barrier around them. Sirius barked, and Remus rushed to him, looking down to see the fragile rise and fall of Harry's chest. Instantly his concerns switched from barriers to the healing spells he knew, aiming to preserve the weak spark of life that lingered. Harry was fighting, and they had to fight for him. Remus focused all of his energy on trying to get Harry stable enough so they could move him. Sirius had transformed back to human and was looking between them, adding his own healing spells. He'd been good enough at patching the odd scratch, but this was different. Remus looked around the room. He noticed all the bodies laying slumped. Figures he vaguely knew, and those he didn't. Lucius Malfoy's body lay broken by the fireplace, and in the middle of the hall were the remains of what had been Lord Voldemort. The stone floor was cracked by the force of magic, Harry's magic, which had ended it. He could tell there was some complicated warding over Draco. He knew if they had to get them out, he had to fix that first, and what he could tell of the spell work made him feel sick.
"Harry," Draco whispered, looking up at Remus. "Is Harry going to be okay?"
"We'll do what we can, I promise," Remus answered, trying to visualize the way the warding was cruelly looped around Draco's body.
"Real touching. Knew you miss me, pretty boy," a voice growled.
It had been over 2.5 decades since he'd heard that voice, but he still knew it and was still trapped by it. He heard Sirius snarl and try to force his body to straighten, to be ready to defend the boys. There was a sudden flash of green light, and Greyback's body fell lifeless to the stone floor.
"Perhaps it would be best," Snape spoke,
standing from near the fire and walking forwards, casting protective enchantments as he went,
"if we counted him among those who fell fighting Harry."
He swept up to them.
"You have to get them out of here. With the Dark Lord gone, there will be chaos.
Take them to Grimald Place. I'll come when I can.
Sirius nodded, and Remus gestured at Draco.
The warding! I can handle that, Snape hissed. I saw how he did it. Here.
He murmured a few quick spells, and the wards seemed to fall away, leaving Draco whole.
Take the boys. I'll join you as soon as it's safe.
Remus nodded, turning to Sirius. He half expected Sirius to complain, but Sirius had already lifted Harry's unconscious body into his arms.
Wait!
Draco yelped, rushing over and grabbing Harry's staff, then rushing back to them.
Severus, come with us!
I can't, Draco. Someone has to manage what's coming. Black, Lupin, go.
Creature turned to Draco, and Draco nodded. The movement was small, hesitant, but it was real. Creature grabbed them, and the world shifted again. Grimald Place had clearly been found. The furniture was broken, the covering of Wahlberg's hanging was ripped, and the balustrade was smashed.
Creature, can you make sure no one other than Snape gets in? Remus asked.
The house elf nodded, then left to begin fixing what was wrong. Sirius carried Harry through to the living room. The couch was destroyed, but Remus was able to pile up some cushions, and Sirius lay Harry there. Drake immediately kneeled beside him.
Stay with the boys, Remus whispered, and left to add to the barrier charms and warding around the property.
He heard the soft whines of Padfoot, and he glanced back to see the dog nuzzling at Harry's face with affection, while Draco patted his fur with shaking hands. Remus couldn't help the sense that he failed, that he let them take Draco, that he hadn't been able to stop Harry going to them. He hadn't even been able to stand and fight against them. If Snape hadn't...
Mr. Lupin!
Creature's voice cut into his thoughts.
What is it?
Creature can ensure the wards are strong. Mr. Lupin should return to Master Sirius and Miss Sissy's boy, and the other chap.
Creature reached out awkwardly, resting a hand on Remus's elbow, as though he needed guiding.
Creature can guard the house.
Thank you.
Remus's voice was little more than a whisper as he walked back to his family.
We should go and fetch our things and...
Creature disappeared from the room, reappearing a few moments later with a trunk that held the boys' possessions.
What else should Creature fetch?
Remus thought of trying to explain, then shook his head.
It can wait, thank you.
He walked over to the trunk. Everything felt a little strange, a little foggy, and he realized he was probably suffering some kind of shock. He fumbled in his pocket for a bar of chocolate, ate a piece, then made his way to Draco and offered the boy one as well. Draco took it, his fingers trembling. His constantly pale skin had taken on an even lighter shade, and Remus wondered how much of the blood staining the boy's robes was his own.
Draco, you need to get changed.
I should stay with Harry, Draco protested. He woke up, he did. He was still, and I thought he was, but he made a noise, and he hugged me at...
Okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's over. It's okay.
Remus kept repeating it, wondering whether he could make it true if he put enough force behind the words.
Let's just get you into something clean, okay?
Draco nodded and walked to his trunk.
Would you like me to spell away the blood?
Remus offered, and when Draco nodded, he did as he was asked, cleaning Draco's face and hair as best as he could. Some lingered, but the boy seemed comforted anyway. He picked out a different robe and untied the one he was wearing. As his robe fell from his shoulders, Remus could see healed scars across his back which had not been there previously. They weren't the parallel claw marks he had feared. They were something else, and he drew comfort from that, even as he hated himself for it. He turned to give the boy privacy to change. Sirius was still in his dog shape, half collapsed across Harry, nuzzling him and whining. It wasn't long before Draco walked back to them, in light grey robes that had once been Regulus's. He sunk down to sit beside Harry and reached out to pat Sirius, and Remus moved to stay beside them. Draco still looked frightened.
Is Harry going to be back soon? Draco asked, blinking back tears. It is Harry, isn't it?
What? Remus began to ask, and wish he hadn't. Because both Voldemort and Harry's body had been in that room, but only one was still breathing. Cautiously, afraid this could be the last thing he did, he reached out and lifted Harry's eyelid. Green. Vivid green, seeming almost to glow.
He looked at Draco and nodded. It's Harry. Draco nodded, reaching out to pat Harry's hair, murmuring softly,
It's okay, Harry. Safe now. Harry's safe. Draco's safe.
He just kept repeating the same words over and over, as though that would be enough to pull Harry back to them.
Sirius, Remus asked, and his partner instantly turned back into a human. We should go to St. Mungo's and...
Going anywhere risks Harry's safety, Sirius answered,
and he looked as unhappy about this as Remus felt.
Anyway, I don't think they know how to handle Harry's magic.
The three of them resumed their vigil around Harry. Sirius's hand gripped Remus's tightly, and Draco slowly fell asleep. Remus gently moved him so that he was laying at Harry's side, the two of them touching. He wondered if Draco's presence might help somehow. He kept watching Harry's breathing and used spells to see the beating of his heart. It was dark outside when he heard a soft whisper from the boy.
Draco.
Draco seemed to hear immediately, his eyes snapping open.
I'm here! I'm here! So are Remus and Sirius! We're safe now! It's okay!
Sirius was awake in an instant as well, reaching for his wand. Harry nodded, whimpering a little, and taking a few more deep breaths.
Hurts. I know, Draco mumbled, but we'll be okay. We've got Remus and Sirius to look after us.
That seemed to soothe Harry, and he fell back asleep. The next 2 days were some of the hardest and longest of Remus's life. Creature appeared regularly with tomato and chicken soup, but the boys left them alone. When Remus broke the rest of the house, he found much of it tidier than before, and that his and Sirius's possessions had also been brought over for them. Draco spent all of his time sat by Harry, watching the other boy with a startling intensity and murmuring reassurances that they were safe. At night, he slept next to Harry. He was clearly exhausted. He developed a definite tremor, but Remus suspected it was his body's response to anxiety rather than any form of lasting curse damage. Sirius mostly stayed by Harry's side as a loyal guard dog, but he made himself take on a human form to sit with Draco and talk through what had happened. Draco curled up where he sat, his head down.
I didn't want to do it, he whispered. I didn't want Harry to come there. And I knew it'd be bad, but he used Crucio, and he said he'd kill my mother. If Harry doesn't get better, it's my fault, isn't it?
No,
Sirius said firmly, and Remus made himself smile and shake his head.
It wasn't your fault, Draco. It was theirs.
Harry killed Father.
Draco whimpered a little.
Father was using Crucio, and Harry made it stop.
He fell silent, gazing at Harry and stubbornly wiping away the tears that kept falling from his eyes.
I told Harry to leave, to be safe, and the Dark Lord... Harry argued. It was Parseltongue, but... I told him to go and then the Dark Lord cut me with his magic, and Severus healed me, and Harry shielded us. And then the shield. He stepped in the way of the killing curse of the Dark Lord. It was my fault.
If you hadn't done it, they'd have imperied you, Remus reasoned, and that seemed to strike home for the boy, visibly calming him. You did what you could. You can't blame yourself.
Slowly, Draco nodded, carefully playing with the miniaturized version of Molly Shaw. The fireplace flickered to life, brilliant green flames shining, and Snape stepped from the fire. He looked as exhausted as Remus felt, but he walked straight to Draco, enfolding the boy in a tight embrace. Draco sobbed in his arms, and Snape rubbed his hand across the boy's shoulders.
Draco, I need to speak to Remus and Sirius. Would it be all right if I cast a muffling spell over you and Harry?
Draco nodded his consent, moving back so that he was beside Harry once more. Snape waved his wand over the boys, and then gestured to the far side of the room. Remus followed, and after a moment's hesitation, so did Sirius.
What's going on?
Trustworthy auras are gathering up the remainder of the Death Eaters. There's widespread chaos. People are unsure if the Dark Lord will return. And Dumbledore? He's a very ill man. But he is demanding we find Harry. He wants him dead, Sirius said.
And Remus hated that it was the truth, because Harry being a Horcrux changed everything. And at the same time, it changed nothing. That was still their little boy, and they had to protect him.
Remus's hand grabbed Sirius's own.
Harry was dead for several minutes. He'd been hit by the killing curse, and there was no sign of life,
Snape said. But Remus was distracted by the boys. Harry's eyes were open again, still green, and he was clearly saying something. Registering this, Snape dropped the silencing spell. Harry looked at them.
Friends?
Yes, Harry. We're your friends.
No.
Harry winced. Talking clearly hurt him.
Friends. Proud. Photo friends.
Bad gone. Harry, Snape said softly. I'm going to use legilimency. Is that all right? We need to see what you've seen. Once I've seen it, I can share it with Sirius and Remus.
Harry didn't argue and kept gazing up as Snape leaned over him, their eyes meeting. For a few moments it was all silent, before Snape pulled back again.
He saw them. Lily and her husband. That's not...
Sirius began to object.
Harry is many things, but he lacks the inclination to lie, or to even imagine the way some children do. They were there. They told him the Horcrux was gone and...
Snape's expression twisted in distaste.
They said you were doing a good job with Harry, so congratulations. I believe he's human now.
He's normal, Remus asked.
I do not think Harry will ever be normal. Not with the magic that flows through him, and not with what he has suffered. But he is no longer a conduit for the Dark Lord's soul. He is Harry, and Harry alone, and... The Dark Lord is gone.
Snape wasn't looking at either of them as he spoke. His gaze instead on the way Draco was half lying over Harry, holding his hand.
It's over. They are free.
Thank you, Remus said to the other man, because he deserved his work to be acknowledged. For a moment, Snape smirked just a little. Then he nodded and inclined his head, moving closer.
Perhaps I could speak to you in private, Lupin.
He glanced towards the door.
Of course.
Remus led him to the corridor.
What is it?
Snape cast a quick silencing spell over the doorway before he spoke.
I need your help with something. It will be a while before the dust from what occurred clears. I do not think that Dumbledore will live more than a couple of weeks, and when he passes, you will not be able to easily hide from the world. I'd recommend speaking with the Order after his passing, and we will ensure the boys are safe, of course.
Of course, Remus echoed. So what do you need my help with?
I need you to get the boys to another room, as this is the one connected to the flu network.
Do you think we are in danger?
No, Snape answered. Not with the warding on the property. I believe only two other people, beyond those in this house currently, would be able to gain access, and one of them is now in Azkaban. But it's the other one which concerns me tonight. I wish for Draco to see his mother.
Of course, Remus answered. He loves her. It would be good.
She is not well.
Snape spoke quietly, his gaze piercing.
I need your assistance to ensure Draco is not unduly worried. I am certain seeing her son would help her, but I need to do it in a way that does not cause unnecessary distress for them both.
Is she going to... Will she live?
Gryffindor, Snape answered, but there was something like amusement in his eyes. Yes. She will live, and she is growing stronger. She is staying with me for now, as the Orwers wish for her to be in Azkaban. She's a strong woman, but you know how children are. They get a paper cut and believe they might bleed to death.
Remus thought that was hardly true of Draco, given everything, but he nodded and agreed to play along. It was decided that the following morning, Narcissa would visit. Snape said goodbye to Draco and left, leaving Remus to put the plan into place. What followed reminded Remus of a Muggle magic trick with Narcissa as the magician, and he, Sirius and Snape playing the role of her assistants, attempting to convince the audience. He explained the plan to Sirius, and they moved the boys back to their old bedroom to sleep, arguing that Harry would sleep better in a bed than on the floor. He set up the living room as Snape asked, and brought the boys their breakfast. Harry managed to swallow some of his stew without help, which was good. Draco stayed beside him as he ate his pancakes. Sirius walked in a few minutes later, catching Remus's eye and nodding.
Draco, you have a visitor. I can stay with Harry if you and Remus want to go and see.
Is it Severus?
Draco asked quietly. And when Sirius simply smiled, he hesitated.
You're... You'll look after Harry, and call me if he needs anything.
Of course, Sirius promised. Go on.
Draco grabbed his bag and got to his feet. He walked beside Remus to the living room, pushing open the door and gasping when he saw his mother sitting in the armchair there, Snape close behind her. As he approached, Remus could see the carefully applied glamour disguising the injuries to her face, but Draco didn't see that. All he saw was the mother he'd been missing for the past 2 years. His face lit up, and so did hers.
My perfect little boy. She leaned forwards, reached out her hand, and Draco hurried to her side, tucking himself against her. She enfolded him into her embrace, letting him clamber up onto her lap and tangle himself in her arms. You've grown so much, my darling. I've missed you, Mother. And I, ye, Draco. I thought of you every day, but you were safe, and that
was what mattered. She brushed a kiss to the top of his hair.
Would you like some tea, Mama? Draco asked quietly, and when Narcissa nodded, Draco turned to the room. Creature, please come Mama and I have some tea.
Creature provided 2 teacups almost instantly. Draco sat with his, focusing on not spilling it when his tremors still hadn't stopped, and Narcissa drank hers smoothly. If Remus hadn't been looking, he would have missed the fact Snape was levitating the cup for her, allowing her to drink without fear of spilling.
You have to tell me what you've been doing, Narcissa told Draco. Severus tells me you made Wolfsbane potion. Yes, Mother.
For a short while, Draco explained to her about what he'd studied, told her all about flying with Harry and playing in the garden, and Narcissa simply nodded along. Eventually, Draco paused.
Is Dobby?
Dobby left our employ, Narcissa told him.
Once it was clear you were gone, he happened to find himself in possession of a sock. But Mother...
Draco objected, and Snape cleared his throat.
Dobby now works in the Hogwarts kitchens. All the time he belonged to the Malfoy family, there was a chance he could be sent to find you, Draco.
She squeezed his shoulder. Is he okay?
I believe so, Snape answered.
My cousin told me a long time ago that house elf magic was different, Narcissa said. I couldn't take the risk of you being found. Will Harry and I stay with you, Mother?
I'm sorry. She looked away from Draco, she answered.
It wouldn't be safe, not for now, Draco. And I've not been well. But I will see you when I can, and I love you so much, my perfect boy.
Remus knew it was a sign of what Draco had already endured, that he didn't complain, and simply cuddled her tighter for a moment.
Narcissa and I must get on, Draco, Snape said firmly.
But he crouched down a little.
Perhaps, if my commitments allow it, we will be able to visit again soon.
Draco nodded quickly, embracing his mother a final time. Goodbye, Mother.
Goodbye, Draco, Narcissa answered, watching until Draco was gone before seeming to slump in her chair a little. Snape stepped forward, holding out his arms, and Narcissa allowed her to lift her, curling against his body. She held Remus's gaze for a moment, and he could see her strength there, even though her exhaustion and pain were obvious.
Thank you for looking after him.
Narcissa's voice was quiet.
He seems happy.
He's a wonderful child, Remus promised her.
That's all I wanted for him,
Narcissa told him as Snape carried her to the waiting flue. Remus watched them depart before returning to the boys and Sirius.
And I told her about you, Harry,
Draco was telling the barely conscious boy.
I hope next time she visits, you can come and see her.
Remus could tell the lie had worked, that Draco wasn't concerned, and he was glad. Seeing Narcissa seemed to help Draco's recovery. The boy was noticeably brighter over the next few days, and had even managed to sit and read his books to Harry for a while. His tremor, whilst not fully gone, had clearly begun to improve. Harry's own recovery was slower. He spent much of his time asleep or barely awake, but he seemed to recognise the three of them, reaching out for cuddles from Draco or Sirius when he was in his animagus form, and smiling when he saw Remus. Snape sent a note after they had been sheltering for a week.
I need to meet you and discuss our next steps. The boys can't stay hidden forever.
So he invited Snape to their house after the boys were asleep, and Padfoot guarded them. Snape arrived and settled himself in the same chair that Narcissa had been sat in. He looked at Remus and nodded sharply.
We are going to have to manage this carefully. If people realize what Harry was, he is in danger.
I have spoken to Minerva. She's looking into ways to prove that there are no remnants of the Dark Lord's soul remaining. Although the challenge will be in ensuring it will take into account the amount of dark magic in the boy. Narcissa and I have been working on a version of the truth which will enable the boys to escape the worst of what is coming. But there will still be a lot of questions asked.
Remus nodded.
Okay, run me through it. He wanted to help, but he could also tell that Snape and Narcissa were better suited for this kind of plotting than he would ever be. We have to ensure that Harry and Draco are both viewed as victims, Snape said carefully. If we present people with too much evidence of Harry's nature, there is a chance it will destroy any hope of him having a normal life. There will be those who clamour for his removal for the safety of all. Instead, we have to ensure that people are on his side. Snape stared through Remus and continued. Present him as the Dark Lord's victim. A trophy that the man snatched up from his murders, saved by Lily's love. Snape's gaze dropped for a moment before he continued. We say the Dark Lord kept Harry. I do not believe there are any survivors from the attacks Harry participated in. Certainly none that would be able to identify Harry as the boy that they saw. We cast his and Draco's friendship as just that. Say they ran away together, and you found them thanks to inside help. You hid them as best you could until they were found, and then Harry defeated him, the same way that he survived the attack that should have killed him. That Lily's love and his concern for the other boy enabled him to throw a bolt of magic strong enough to end the Dark Lord's rule. No one need know of the Horcruxes, or how favoured Harry was, or what happened to Draco. Simply present it as a magical miracle, a story of two boys being friends. I witnessed the final battle. You and Black arrived soon after. We field the questions, persuade the public that it was simply Harry's power, coupled with a surge of magic in order to protect his friend.
Silence fell. Remus followed thickly and looked up at him. You think it'd work?
People have believed a lot more with a lot less. The boys will still attract attention, and Harry is still unusual enough that he might get notice. But we release the information, allow them to see the children, answer the questions they have, and then let the boys fade into obscurity.
All right. Remus managed to smile. Thanks for this.
Don't mention it, Lupin. He turned towards the flames. Once Dumbledore is gone, the Order will be meeting. You would need to be there, and we can assure you train the boys to give the correct answers when this comes to the media.
It was a week after the meeting with Snape that the news came from the Order that Dumbledore had died. The funeral was held, but Remus did not wish to go. So instead he stayed with Sirius and the boys. Harry was managing to sit up, although he was still as weak as a kitten.
What do you want to do today, Harry?
Draco asked, his voice gentle and kind.
Broom, Harry answered.
That might be a bit ambitious, Sirius said with a laugh.
Broom, Harry pouted, and Draco shook his head. When you're a bit better, Harry, if you try and fly now, you'll fall off.
Harry hissed, and Remus got the definite sensation he was being sworn at. But Harry leaned his head on Draco's shoulder and looked at him hopefully.
Story?
Story sounds good, Draco agreed, and went to grab one of his books before he settled down at Harry's side. Remus listened to Draco read, trying not to think of the kindness Dumbledore had shown him when he'd been younger than these two boys. He knew now that the man had wanted to destroy Harry, but it was still hard for him to match that cold cruelty to the acceptance and love he had found when he had desperately needed it. As though understanding his sorrow, Sirius came to sit beside him, wrapping an arm around Remus' shoulder and cuddling him close. Remus let himself fall into the embrace, mourning the man in silence and knowing that his family was safe now, even as an emptiness settled, only to be chased away by Sirius's love. Remus appeared before the Order a few days after the funeral. He explained what had happened, backing up Snape's explanation. They were honest here, about almost everything. The nature of Greyback's death remained hidden, as did what Remus was piecing together the life that Harry had before his escape. The Horcruxes, Harry's power, and Harry's death were all laid out in the open, and arrangements were made to allow Harry to be examined to prove the soul fragment had left him. And then it was time to lower some of the wards. Even though Remus and Sirius would have liked to hide the boys from the chaos outside, it wouldn't always be possible, not if they wanted them to have a normal life. Things were changing. Efforts were being made to free the innocent from Azkaban and to imprison those who had perpetuated the most harm in the past regime. McGonagall was going to step into the role of headmistress, and had said she would like both boys at the school when they were ready. We must know that was good news. He was afraid about the boys going to Hogwarts, but it was proof that he would have to start getting them back out into the world. Remus found himself holding Sirius's hand, standing in sight of both boys. Draco was speaking, but his words were silenced by a magical barrier, keeping Sirius and Remus from interfering in the conversation that was being held. Thankfully, it was Kingsley who was talking to the boys, with Moody simply providing backup. He'd agreed to stand a short distance away, which was a relief, given that the boys were both rather frightened of him. Draco seemed to be a little quiet, but Harry sat beside him, holding his hand as Draco answered the questions that were asked. Finally, Kingsley seemed to have enough information, stood up, smiled at both boys, and cancelled the barrier. He walked over to Sirius and Remus.
The boys have given answers to everything. I will ensure that what hits the official records will not endanger either of them. However, what we have heard confirms what we were told by Professor Snape, and I will be pushing for the rest warrant for Narcissa Malfoy to be dropped, and the one for you, Sirius.
Thank you.
Sirius looked almost nervous, and Remus grinned and held his hand. Soon, Sirius could be a free man. He wouldn't need to hide.
Can I make a suggestion?
Kingsley said.
Draco mentioned that when Harry is panicking, sometimes he lapses into parcel tongue, and then becomes upset that no one can understand him.
What of it? It's not his fault.
Sirius glared.
I wasn't saying it was. I just thought perhaps the boy might benefit from a snake or something, so he had someone to talk to in parcel tongue when he needs it.
Oh.
Sirius seemed to deflate.
I'll see what we can do.
Before there could be a snake, there was the nightmare facing the press. The Prophet sent a single reporter, Betty Braithwaite. He smiled gently at the boys and encouraged them to sit down beside her. Harry was barely walking, leaning on Draco and his staff.
It's quite all right, dears. We're going to be talking to your dads then.
They aren't our dads, Draco corrected, before leaning in to listen to Harry and straightening his posture. I mean, they aren't my dads. Sirius looked at Remus with an expression somewhere between terror and excitement, and Remus grinned back.
Now I hear that the two of you were very brave.
She began to speak, and Remus nodded.
They were. They did so well,
Sirius agreed, stepping in to shield the boys from her questions. She gave him a knowing look, then ignored him. Instead, she smiled at both boys in a way that felt unsettling.
Draco, isn't it? I suppose they aren't your fathers. Would you like to tell our readers about your real father?
Her voice was gentle, but Sirius snarled a little, earning a sharp glare from Snape. Draco looked up, swallowing anxiously and curling up smaller against Harry.
My father wasn't a very good man. He hurt me, and Harry, and my mother, and I'm glad we're safe now. It's...
He wiped his eyes, and Braithwaite's quilt added its own annotation to the sheet.
Eyes glistening with tears, the young Malfoy boy speaks of his abusive upbringing among the Death Eaters, struggling to...
Remus cleared his throat, looking at Braithwaite.
Draco is only a child. We agree that most of this would be directed at the adults here, not the children. They've already done enough with the roles they've played. They don't need to do any more.
The audience will simply be curious about how this friendship blossomed.
She leaned in a little.
Draco, dear. What's that on your arm?
Remus could have flinched. Draco's movement had exposed his mark, and he was afraid of what might come next. Draco apparently had been but a brief by Snape than he himself had. The boy lifted his head, looking up at her.
It's not the dark mark, Mum. It's something that was done just before we escaped, when Harry and I... We were better friends than they would have liked. It's to remind me who I was meant to be.
He leaned against Harry, and the photographer's shutter clicked a couple more times, giving off clouds of acrid smoke.
I think it would be better for the children's health if they were not forced to relive what's happened.
Snape stepped forwards.
We can have a few photographs, and then I think it would be best that they were left in peace. Lupin and I can answer any remaining questions you have.
Draco was amazingly patient during the photographs, carefully repeating instructions to Harry, who seemed to be more withdrawn than usual, and keeping a grip on Draco's hand. He let the photographer pose him and adjusted Harry as necessary. Finally, it was over, and Sirius was able to usher the boys away. Remus could see the tension in him,
knew his lover wanted to morph into his dog form just to find some brief comfort. Braithwaite smiled at them placidly. "Does Mr. Black have anything to say about his imprisonment?" Cyrus turned and looked Remus in the eye for a moment before he nodded.
"I'm not the only innocent person to end up in Azkaban. I was lucky to escape. Many others have not been. And all the while my godson was suffering because people wouldn't listen. And now I'm going to take my godson and my nephew to eat some ice cream from our freezer and have a chance to be children."
He reached out for them, ushering them away from the journalist. Remus moved to sit beside Snape, and together they fielded a few more questions with Snape taking the lead. Snape knew what he was doing, knew how to make Lupin and Sirius sound like the heroes. Finally it was over and she left.
"Do you think that will be enough?"
Remus asked, and Snape nodded.
"It'll work for now. There'll be more questions, but we can ask for some privacy from the boys now, and then we will have to start bringing them back into the world."
Remus didn't voice his fears about Harry. Snape seemed to realise them anyway.
"Draco is skilled with Harry. Between him and Black, I am sure it will be manageable. I will bring Narcissa to visit tomorrow, and I expect to see you all at the Order meeting this Wednesday evening at the Burrow."
With that, he left, and Remus was able to return to his family and hold them close. Harry had somehow managed to bring the ice cream up to room temperature while still maintaining a solidity, which was not the most pleasant sensation, but a problem for another day. Draco held tightly onto Harry's hand as they made their way out from the flue in the Burrow, blinking around curiously at the home. It was a comfortable wizarding household, full of love, and it reminded Remus of his childhood. He wondered if it felt strange to the boys, being somewhere so peaceful. Sirius followed close behind, smiling a little when Scoppy the owl came fluttering over to sit on Remus's shoulder and nibble his ear.
"Scoppy!"
Molly called out, shooting the owl back to her perch. She shook her head and wiped flour on her apron, vanishing it with a quick mutter before she offered a hug to Draco. The boy rushed to her, curling into her arms, and she stroked his hair with tenderness.
"It's good to see you all. How are you?"
Harry looked up at her and spoke carefully.
"Good, thank you."
Remus could sense Draco's pride, and knew the boy had been working hard to get Harry to pass as normal for at least a short conversation. Harry was still unsteady and tired painfully easily, although his immense natural magic showed no sign of having been weakened by Lord Voldemort's end. Draco smiled and nodded in answer to Molly's question, then smiled up at her politely.
"Severus tells me congratulations are in order, ma'am."
"Well, it's mostly a formality," she said with a soft smile. "Now that everything is better, Arthur and I are going to get married. We've wanted to for a long time, but it was never..." She shook her head. "The important thing is that we can marry now, and I wondered if you and Harry might like to come along to the wedding. I don't expect either of you to sit through the ceremony. That might be very boring for you. But you could come along before, maybe, to help Ginny and Ron and Neville make the table decorations."
"Both of us?"
Draco asked quietly, and at her nod he turned to Harry, stepping closer so they could whisper without being overheard. He turned around, smiled at her and nodded.
"That would be good, thank you."
Remus knew that they needed to get the boys used to other children, and this would be a good start for that. Sirius's arms wrapped around Remus's waist.
"Why does Molly have your owl?"
"I kept her until I found out about the boys. Then I had to focus on them, and they needed an owl."
"I suppose so," Sirius smirked.
"No!" Harry yelled, crossing his arms and glaring, and the furniture began to shake.
Draco moved to stand in front of Harry, talking quietly, and after a few seconds the tension seemed to fade, leaving Molly looking a little flustered.
What happened?" Remus asked.
Draco looked rather unimpressed, brushing Harry's hair out of his eyes and then turning to the adults.
"Harry didn't like the suggestion of apple juice. I'm just explaining to him that it's not always poisoned."
"Apple juice bad,"
Harry muttered, petulant, and Remus found himself laughing despite himself. Minerva came walking over, head held high and a slight frown on her forehead.
"Oh dear, Mr. Lupin, I see Severus wasn't... still."
She crouched down and immediately seemed gentler, kinder. The same teacher that Remus remembered from his own childhood.
"You two are looking to go to Hogwarts, aren't you?"
"If it's safe,"
Draco answered immediately, Remus wished he didn't feel the need to state that they would be safe at Hogwarts, but he met Draco's questioning gaze and nodded.
I promised you both. All students at my school will be safe. That includes the two of you. Now, I've been speaking with Severus, and I have some plans in place. But first of all, I just need to check that Harry has managed to... that there isn't any lingering...
She sighed and shook her head.
That Harry's soul is only his own.
You mean that the Horcrux is gone? Draco asked quietly. Because the people Harry saw said it was.
I know.
She smiled and drew her wand.
The spell won't hurt, Harry, but I just need to check.
Harry glanced at Draco, and once Draco nodded permission, Harry nodded too. Can I still hold on to him?
If you need to, then yes.
Minerva answered. She smiled.
I'll need to cast it on both of you. But even if somehow you have a bit of each other's soul that isn't...
She shook her head and then stepped back a little. She cast the spell, and a web of golden light seemed to form around Harry and Draco, twisting around them. For a moment it glowed brighter, before fading into the silver of an incorporeal Patronus, and then disappearing into the air.
Two souls. Just the voice. It's gone.
Do we need to sit in the corner and play quietly? Draco asked softly, looking nervously at the fire when it turned green, and Kingsley and Tonks stepped through. The girl waved at them. He looked unsettled, and Remus shook his head. How about you boys go home with Sirius, and I'll get Snape to come back with me after the meeting, and report to you how it went. The visible relief on Draco's face confirmed that was the right choice to make, and Remus kissed Sirius goodbye. Draco said goodbye to Molly, and then Sirius took them home.
Mr. Lupin, I've got a proposition for you. Our current defense against the dark arts teacher is already speaking of quitting, and given the role you played in the recent events.
In the end, it was easier to go to a muggle shop to find a snake, rather than face the recognition that followed wherever they stepped out in public in the wizarding world. Sirius had suggested Polyjuice, but just going to a nondescript reptile dealer was easier. Harry's face lit up as soon as they got there, and he rushed up and down the aisles between the large glass tanks, pressing his face to each one in turn and gesturing at them, babbling away to Draco and then hissing at the snakes.
Sirius was keeping an eye, ready to step in when the memory charm of the shop owner seemed to register that Harry wasn't just hissing at the snakes and was conversing with them. But the man simply gave Harry an indulgent smile, then looked back at them.
Your son seems enthusiastic.
He's always liked snakes, Remus answered quickly. He's quite a unique child, and has faced quite a lot of difficulties in his education, but he's working hard. He let the man read whatever he wanted to in his words. We thought if we got him a snake. We'll help, of course, but he really wants to care for one.
That sounds good. We've got a few here, good for beginners. Ball pythons, milk snakes, corn snakes, Kenyan sand boas. It depends on the size of the enclosure and the behaviour, and obviously your budget. Some of the morphs can be quite pricey, but...
We're going to let him pick, Sirius said firmly. We'll happily pay for whatever the snake needs, but it's important that he chooses. The shop owner raised an eyebrow, but he didn't argue, which Remus was grateful for. Harry seemed to be taking his decision-making very seriously. Draco seemed to steer him away from some of the tanks, but then Harry talked to several of the snakes for a few minutes before he finally seemed to settle on one. He looked up. Remus! Sirius! Snake! Remus walked over, frowning a little at the snake he had chosen, which was small but rather concernedly banded in red, black and white. Is that dangerous?
It's a red milk snake,
the shop owner answered.
He's a mimic, so he looks much more dangerous than he is. Non-venomous. He'll be a good choice for your boy. Let me get you a leaflet and you can decide if you want to get him.
Harry hissed at the snake, then looked hopefully up at Sirius and Remus.
Like snake. Good snake.
All right, kid, Sirius laughed. We'll get you your damn snake. What are you calling it? Draco asked. Harry frowned, tilting his head to the side and thinking.
Snake!
Draco laughed, and Harry smiled at having made him laugh. Things felt calmer. It wasn't long before they left the shop, laden with what Snake would need. As soon as they were home, Snake was out and sitting on Harry's hand, being talked to. Harry smiled up at them.
Snake likes you too.
He carefully brushed a finger over the snake's head.
Safe now.
Remus smiled to himself. It wasn't going to be a smooth journey, no matter how much he wanted it to be. But that night, looking in on the sleeping boys, Remus got the feeling maybe they could work this out. Snake was curled up in his tank, and Draco and Harry were asleep in each other's arms, lit by Draco's ever-burning candle. There was still a lot to do before it would be possible for the boys to have anything like a normal life, but Remus knew no matter how hard it was, he and Sirius would be there to support them.
You've been listening to More Powerful Than Experience, written by Flight and Flame, and read by Bobo Pie. Thank you for listening.
Chapter 21. Draco, the Hogwarts Express. At the end of August, Draco found himself packing for Hogwarts for the second time in his life. All of his things were spread out in neat piles on the floor around him as he tried to work out which ones he wanted to take with him. Last time he had tried to do this, he'd been supervised by his mother, knowing that she was fighting back tears and that he might never see her again. He'd been afraid, aware he was throwing himself upon the mercy of strangers who cared nothing for him. And had he known at that time that the men he would be given to would be a werewolf and a convicted murderer, he might have asked to stay at home despite the danger. This time was different. For a start, he had things he actually needed for Hogwarts. School robes, a telescope, and of course his wand. Not that he would put that in his trunk, as it belonged in the blue bag he carried everywhere. He had books for second year, but he was taking most of his first year books along as well, in case he needed them for reference. He didn't need to take all of his favourite robes with him. Some could stay in his and Harry's bedroom at Grimmauld Place, where they would be safe and await his return. He did pack his toy dragon, though, and his dragon statue, and his snitch, and the blanket Mrs. Weasley had made him, and some of his favourite robes. The past few months had been a lot to handle, but he managed it with Harry and Sirius, and Remus on his side. Headmistress McGonagall had come to visit them several times, and Draco had shown her his spell work. He'd managed to transfigure a needle into a working matchstick, and turn a beetle into a button, and shown her he could make things fly. Headmistress McGonagall had smiled at him brightly, and Draco had felt hopeful. Then she glanced down at her list and nodded.
From what I've seen, I've got no issue with saying that you have passed the first year at Hogwarts, and you can join the second year. There's no point in repeating what you already know, and I'm aware you've been creating Wolfsbane, but we can now hand that responsibility back to Professor Snape. You've done incredibly well, Mr. Malfoy. Now as for Mr. Potter...
Mom, Draco said quietly, feeling all warm and happy that Severus had mentioned his patient's work. We should probably go outside if Harry is going to be using his magic. She'd looked a little troubled, but she nodded, and they'd gone outside. Harry had looked a bit uncertain, so Draco smiled at him encouragingly.
Why don't we start with Lumos?
The headmistress had suggested, and Draco had automatically covered his eyes before Harry obligingly straightened his staff and said, Lumos, creating an almost blinding light until he got rid of it. What followed was Harry doing everything he was asked to, even if he didn't use the right spells. He could make things fly, and change shape, and do things that weren't even on the first year syllabus. He just didn't use magic right. Draco had been a bit frightened that the headmistress might say Harry couldn't go to school. Instead, she nodded.
Very well done, Mr. Potter. I see you're going to be bringing all kinds of challenges for us, and it will be a delight to have you.
Harry had looked at Draco, and Draco had beamed at him. She says he can go. Harry had hugged him then, tightly, and Draco had realized it was real, that he was actually going to be allowed to go to Hogwarts and study magic. They met with Ron and Ginny and Neville a few times over the summer, but not in the same way he'd met with Harry. Molly would just invite Draco and Harry over to help with something, or to fly in her garden, or to make something new, and sometimes the other children would be there, and they would play together. Ginny was very good at flying, which meant she and Harry could have races sometimes, and Draco would join if he wanted to. Draco knew at the school they'd have to meet a lot of new children, and he felt quite anxious about it, but he knew Remus and Sirius would be there. Remus would be teaching, and Sirius would be there to help in his Animagus form. Because of everything, and because Draco got scared sometimes of new places, and Harry didn't like not knowing what was going on, they'd been given the chance to visit the school that summer, just them and Remus and Sirius. They'd been shown around by the headmistress, taken to the classrooms they would be using, and seen the Great Hall. Draco didn't like the Great Hall very much,
but he thought it might be different when it's full of children. They'd even got the chance to see the dormitories for the second-year boys in every house, even Gryffindor, which Draco told his mother all about. She'd laughed a lot when he told her, and he'd laughed too. He knew he'd be in Slytherin, but he still thought it was nice to get the chance to look around, so that wherever he ended up, it would be somewhere he'd been before. Harry had been a little strange in the Slytherin dorms. He kept tilting his head to the side as though he was listening to something, but there hadn't been any noise. When Draco had asked about it, Harry had just shrugged and cuddled up against him again, his hand resting safely over Draco's mark. For now, though, Draco's concern was carefully repacking his trunk so he'd have what he needed. He added Regulus's old chess set, then hesitated as his fingers brushed against the set of dark grey robes that weren't his. Unpacking his trunk fully had turned up all kinds of sticks and leaves, and pebbles that Harry had taken as toys when they first started to live with Sirius and Remus. Those were all neatly in a pile for Harry to put out in the garden later. But these were different. "Harry!" Draco called out, glancing up at the other boy who was watching Draco pack as he sat on their bed with Snape curled around his arm. What do we do with these?" Harry hesitated for a moment, glancing towards his own trunk, which was already carefully packed with everything it was meant to have, and a few extra things he'd snuck in. Then he shook his head, reaching out for them, and Draco handed them over. They were too small now. Both boys had grown in the last 3 years, and even Draco's favourite robes had grown too short to be easily adjusted by Creature. Remus had made Draco a quilt for some of his old robes that didn't fit, so he could keep them, and they'd made Narcissa a matching lap blanket. Draco knew now that his mother's legs didn't work anymore. She'd been injured too badly after Draco had left, and she and Severus had tried to hide it from him. But Draco was clever, and he had figured it out. He'd asked her about it, and she'd just cuddle him, and told her that it was all right, because he and Harry were safe and happy, and she got to see them now, and nothing was more important than that. Harry's magic couldn't heal her injury because it already healed, and Draco had been sad, because he liked walking in the gardens with Mother when they'd been allowed. But she promised him it was okay, and if Mother said it was okay, then he trusted her. The fact that Draco's old robes had been made into blankets didn't really answer what they should do with Harry's old robes. Draco guessed that it was up to Harry. Harry looked down at the robes and hissed to himself, clearly angry. Then he looked up at Draco, and Draco could see that he was sad. "Harry? Bad," Harry muttered, before focusing and carefully picking out a sentence. His speaking had got a lot better over the past few months, but it was still difficult for him when he was upset or angry. "Bad man! Dark Lord was bad! Hurt Draco! No want robes!" He glared at them, curling his fingers up tighter, and then flames licked along their edges. Sirius burst in through the door almost immediately, followed by Remus. Draco thought maybe Sirius had smelled the flames, but he paused, watching as the fire crept up the fabric, reducing it to ash, and licking across Harry's fingers without causing him any pain or harm. Eventually Harry let go, and the last few pieces of thread fell down to land on top of the ash.
"Well done, Harry," Sirius spoke,
and he wiped his eyes.
"Good choice. You don't have to deal with any of that shit any longer."
Remus nodded, stepped forwards, and gently gave Draco a hug, which Draco passed on to Harry. Harry nervously moved to lean against Remus, cuddling Draco, and Sirius flopped in front of them in dog form. Draco thought Sirius might have got some of the ash on him, but Sirius was always a messy dog, so it didn't matter. Draco felt almost like he might be sick. He was so excited and nervous and happy. Today, he would be going to Hogwarts, with Harry and Sirius and Remus. He was going to go, and he was going to study magic, and be the little star his mother had always told him that he would be. He was going to use the school hours to send letters to her as much as he could. She was going to be staying with Aunt Andromeda and her husband, and their new baby for some of the time, because Severus was at school. But sometimes she would be living in Severus's house, which was quieter and calmer and safer than the manor was. Draco knew Harry had been happy when he'd taken the two of them to Severus's house, and that had ended up going well. So he hoped it would be good for his mother, too. Remus had promised he'd take Draco to visit her on some weekends, and so would Severus, because it was important, and the headmistress agreed. So he didn't need to worry about his mother, and the house would be looked after by Creature while they were away, and Harry would be right beside him,
but he still felt a lot. He had thought for a long time that he'd never actually get to go to Hogwarts, even though he wanted it more than anything. But now he was going. He had to wear muggle clothes to go to the station, and Harry had to wear shoes. According to the headmistress, Harry had to wear shoes in potions, and in herbology, and in care of magical creatures, which Harry wasn't happy about. But he'd agreed because Draco said it was important. And so the two of them, and Sirius and Remus, made their way to the station from their apparition point, pushing along their four trunks. Draco felt quite nervous about going onto the platform. He knew how it should work. He was just scared in case somehow it didn't work. Maybe it wouldn't let him through after everything. Remus's hand gave his shoulder a gentle squeeze.
Best to do it at a bit of a run, if you're nervous. Don't stop, and don't be scared you'll crash into it. He smiled. Want me to do it with you?
Draco nodded, and Remus's arm bracketed around him. Sirius was a human for now. He was going to change when they got on the train, because people weren't meant to know that he was an animagus. The two of them walked together, and Draco started to speed up as they got close. He was scared he'd hit the barrier, but Remus was with him, and when Draco opened his eyes, he was there. The Hogwarts Express was waiting on the platform, and it was full of people. More people than Draco thought he'd ever seen before. There were families saying goodbye, and owls and cats and people talking, and students greeting each other and embracing. Draco felt overwhelmed. If Remus hadn't been there, he would have curled up and hidden, and hoped he'd be overlooked. Then Harry's hand rested over his mark, and he looked up to find warm green eyes gazing at him happily, and things felt a little bit easier. The four of them set off along the platform. Harry and Draco kept staring at the train, but Sirius was looking in the other direction entirely.
Draco,
Sirius called, and Draco turned around and gasped at what he saw. His mother was there, waiting for him. She was sitting in the wheelchair, her lap blanket covering her legs, and she smiled when she saw him. Draco ran to her, pulling Harry along with him, and climbed onto her lap to embrace her, unashamed of the affection he was showing. She cradled him against her.
You're here.
I wouldn't miss this for the world, Draco. My darling little boy off to Hogwarts. She stroked his hair from his face. I'll be expecting you to write.
Yes, Mother, Draco promised. And I'll get Harry to write to you too.
That's very kind of you. Mother ruffled his hair fondly. She still looked tired a lot, and he knew she was using glamours, but she still made him feel safe, the way she'd always had. Now, I know the school has owls, but we don't want you making them all tired. She waved, and Aunt Andromeda came walking over. She was carrying what was unmistakably an owl cage, covered in the blanket. Uncle Ted was behind her, holding little baby Delphine, who was Tonks' sister. Draco knew Aunt Andromeda hadn't been pregnant, but that was okay because she still had a baby. Normally Draco liked to talk to Aunt Andromeda, but for now his focus was on the cage. Mother took the cage from Aunt Andromeda and handed it to him with a smile, and he pulled off the blanket to find a beautiful brown eagle owl staring back at him, its amber eyes gazing around curiously.
They're beautiful, Mother. Thank you.
It's all right, Draco.
I thought that you could use an owl. Mother laughed a little when the owl seemed to spot Snape, who was immediately retreating further up Harry's sleeve as Harry hissed his disapproval. You'll be good now, all right? She smiled and gave handed him a letter. This is just to say good luck, my darling. You'll write and let me know as soon as you're sorted, won't you?
Yes, Mother.
What if I'm not? You will be. But if you aren't, I'll love you just the same. She promised him. Now go on. Servants will be waiting for you. He gave her a final hug and they took Harry's hand as they made their way onto the train. Remus and Sirius helped sort out their trunks. And then they went towards the front so that Sirius could slip into his dog form for comfort. Remus and he could get on. If they needed anything, Harry could always take the two of them to the adults. But the plan was for him and Harry to wait on the train and try to make friends, like the other students. Draco wanted to try, wanted to prove to them that he and Harry would do well at the school. The train shuddered to life, and Harry pressed his face against the window, waving.
Draco! Molly!
Draco rushed to the window in time to see her. He waved quickly, and he thought he saw her waving back.
that the train was picking up speed and zooming through the countryside, and Draco and Harry sat side by side in their carriage. Draco felt very small and nervous, even though he knew that Severus would be at the school. Harry seemed to sense his nerves and reached out to stroke his hair. Draco curled into his embrace. At around midday, a woman came along with a trolley full of sweets, and Draco carefully picked some out for him and Harry, paying with the money Remus had given him. She smiled and gave him his change, and he carried the small pile of sweets back to Harry. Draco carefully put some into his bag to save for later, and then he ate some with Harry. Ron and Neville came to say hello when the train was going past the forest. Draco had been reading to himself to try and calm his nerves, but he put his book away to say hello to the two Gryffindor boys, who were already in their school robes. Ginny followed them into the carriage, and she was accompanied by a slender blonde girl who waved at them and smiled at Harry.
"Your glowy eyes are very pretty,"
the new girl told Harry, walking over and sitting down opposite them.
"I think that they're a sign of health. That's good. And I don't see any rack spreads around either of you."
She held out her hand and smiled.
"I'm Luna. I'm new this year too. But Ginny said you're going to be in her brother's year."
Draco nodded and she smiled and pulled out a magazine that she began to read upside down. Draco wasn't sure if he should tell her it was upside down or not, but he ended up staying quiet because he didn't want to upset her. Ron and Neville sat down as well, and so did Ginny.
"If you're in Gryffindor, you should be on the Quidditch team,"
Ron told Harry, and Harry shrugged and cuddled up to Draco. Draco tried not to panic at the thought that Harry might be in Gryffindor. As they got closer to the school, Draco and Harry had to put on their robes, so Ginny and Luna were sent out into the corridor while they changed. Ron looked at Draco funny when he was dressed.
"What happened to your back?"
Ron asked, frowning.
"Did someone hurt you?"
"It's okay now,"
Draco told him, and Harry nodded, wrapping protectively around Draco like a snake and nuzzling his face into Draco's shoulder. Draco relaxed a little and they called the girls back in. The six of them talked quietly until the train began to slow down as they arrived. Draco felt almost dizzy with excitement and held tight to Harry as he made his way down onto the crowded platform.
"Is that... that's Harry Potter, isn't it?"
someone whispered, and Draco was painfully aware of everyone turning to look at them. For a moment, he thought about just asking Harry to take him to the castle there and then, to avoid the stairs. But he knew that he was meant to be pretending that Harry was normal, even if it wouldn't work for very long. That meant that Harry definitely shouldn't be apparating within Hogwarts grounds, regardless of whether or not he could.
"Harry! Draco!"
Ron's voice called out, and Draco looked over in relief to find the other boy waving from a carriage. He led Harry over, and the two of them climbed inside. Neville was already in, and there were two other boys inside.
"This is Dean, and this is Seamus,"
Ron introduced with a quick flick of his hand.
"Draco, Harry."
"Good to meet you both," Draco answered. He'd been careful to ask Ron about other students in their year, gathering information from when he met them. He looked at Dean.
"You're a West Beef supporter?"
"West Ham,"
Dean grinned at him.
"But yeah, you play football?"
Ron was trying to explain it to us this summer. We tried to play it with a goffle, but I'm not sure we did it right," Draco answered carefully. The carriage they were in had rumbled to life, led by some strange black horses.
"You think you're going to be in Gryffindor?"
Seamus asked, looking at the two of them, and Draco smirked a little and shook his head.
"No, I don't think so. My family's been Slytherin for the past 38 generations, so I'm hoping..."
"You think they'll chuck you out?"
Seamus grinned, and Draco tilted his head and considered. "They did disinherit my cousin, but no, I didn't believe they would." He squeezed Harry's hand. Neville leaned forward curiously.
"Is that a snake?"
"Yes, snake,"
Harry answered, showing them snake with a degree of pride. Draco kept a close eye, ready to step in if there were any problems, but the other boys all seemed to like snakes, so it was okay. The conversation moved on.
"Are you nervous about being behind in your classes?"
Neville asked.
"I mean, I can help you in herbology if you like, but I'm not much good on anything else."
"I've covered the syllabus, although I haven't really had much practical herbology practice," Draco answered carefully.
"I'd be scared of annoying the teachers," Seamus said thoughtfully. "Snape might get mad if you don't know where all the potion ingredients are,"
Neville murmured, nibbling his lip.
"I can't remember, but Ron's good at it."
"It's okay.
Draco said softly. Snape's my godfather. I know how he organizes a potions lab.
The other boys fell silent at that, and soon the carriage was rolling up to the castle gates.
Draco felt very nervous as he climbed down, especially as he spotted Severus, who walked up to him with a faint nod of approval.
You two need to come this way.
They waved goodbye to Ron and the other boys, and followed Severus along to a side chamber while everyone else filed into the great hall. Harry was bouncing a little where he stood, and Draco was only just able to restrain himself from doing the same. They were inside Hogwarts because they were going to study, and they were going to be able to be normal students. Severus squeezed his shoulder gently.
You'll be fine, Draco.
What if Harry isn't in the same house as me? Draco whispered, and Severus shook his head.
I don't think you'll need to worry about that, Severus answered. If nothing else, Harry has proved himself to be incredibly stubborn. You'll be going in with the first years to be sorted, and I expect the two of you to set an example to them, as you are older than they are. There will then be the feasts. Professor Lupin will be up at the table with me, and you have permission to leave at any point if you need to.
Thank you, Draco whispered, remembering what had happened the first time he'd stepped into the Great Hall. What had happened to Harry? Harry curled against him, and Severus swept from the room. Harry, we have to go up. Remember what Headmistress McGonagall said? We have to go up when they call our name, put the hat on, and decide which house we're in, and then we can sit with our house. Then the headmistress arrived, and they followed her into the room with a bunch of anxious-looking first years. Draco spotted Ginny and Luna there, but he couldn't say anything to them because McGonagall was leading them through the hall. It felt even bigger than the last two times he'd been here, and his gaze drifted up at the beautiful starry ceiling. Then the headmistress produced the sorting hat, and everyone stared at it. Draco gave Harry's hand an extra squeeze as it twitched and began to sing. 1,000 years I've played this role, and done so with some renown. By placing each student into the place, they'll go from child to fully grown. I've guided each into their home. The place where they belong, and so, dear student, do not fear. Don't fret, I won't go wrong. In each of you there is a skill, a talent, and a truth, and that will guide you ever on. It is already there in youth. For some who live in Gryffindor, bravery will stay through your ages. And for those who dwell in Ravenclaw, an undying love of pages. For Slytherin, a cunning mind, backed with ambition, leads you high. And for Hufflepuff, your loyalty, and friendships never dry. In one house your story starts, whether you are early or you're late. So try me on and come to find your future and your fate.
After the song was finished, everyone burst into applause, and Harry looked at the hat hesitantly. The headmistress started to call out names, and Draco watched children rushing off to their tables as soon as their houses were called out. He felt a little sick, but he tried to hide it. He didn't want to worry Harry. And anyway, Remus and Sirius were here, and both of them had been in Gryffindor, so it didn't matter which house he ended up in, not really. Luna got sent to the Ravenclaw table, and then it was his turn.
Malfoy, Draco!
He could feel everyone staring and heard the whispers that had followed them from the train, louder this time. Other than the Muggle-born first years, they'd all known who he was, even though he didn't want them to, and he hated that. He reached the stool, and as soon as the hat brushed the top of his hair, it screamed,
Slytherin!
Relief flooded him, but he was careful not to let it show, and walked over to the Slytherin table, where the students were cheering loudly enough to drown out any booing from other tables. He looked up at the teachers, and Severus nodded again. Remus beamed and smiled at him, and he felt a little calmer. Then he looked at Harry, who was still waiting and looking very nervous and small, his hand pressed against his own arm in an attempt at comfort. Draco tried to smile at him, even though he waited with a sense of sickness as Noel Francis became a Ravenclaw and Ollivander Jacob joined Hufflepuff. Potter Harry was met with even more excitement than his own name had been. People twisted to look, and he heard one of the boys near him lean in. Is that a snake? He's allowed it, Draco said defensively, almost holding his breath. You're the boys in the paper, aren't you? The boy nudged him. Theodore. Theodore Knott. I'm a second year too. Good to meet you. Draco managed a weak smile and focused on Harry, wanting to just press his mark and call Harry here. But it was on the hat to decide. It was only a few seconds before the hat delivered its verdict. Slytherin! The Slytherin table erupted into cheers, although a few looked unhappy. Harry ran straight to him, wrapping his arms around him
and Draco returned to the embrace just as tightly while the last few were sorted. So what if people stared at him and Harry? Sirius had told him that would happen, that it would always happen, and he'd rather be stared at than leave Harry to face the stairs alone. McGonagall was clapping her hands as Ginny ran to Gryffindor, and where Patrick made his way over to his seat in Slytherin.
Welcome, all of our students, old and new. It is a delight to be able to start a new year with so many of you here, and with so much hope for our future. We ask, as always, for those of you who know the school well to support those who do not, and to take care of everyone in our community. And with that, let the feast begin.
Draco gasped as the plates filled with food. He grabbed a couple of cups from his bag, casting a quick agrimenti into both of them. Harry took his and bumped his arm against Draco's in a more subtle show of affection, as everyone around them began to eat.
Your... Theo found. That's an advanced spell.
I had to learn it to be safe, Draco said carefully. There were a lot of people who wanted to get rid of us, but we're okay now. He remembered what Severus had told him to say. He carefully found food Harry could eat and got that for him, and helped cut it up before he filled his own plate. The food was delicious and warm, and he ate hungrily, allowing the conversations to wash over him. Theo nudged him, pointing at a group of girls farther down the table.
Those girls are in our year. Daphne's great at charms, so if you need any help, go to her.
Thank you. I'm good at potions, Draco supplied.
For a while, Theo simply explained to them who various figures were, highlighting prefects and members of the Sacred 28, and Draco made sure to be seen talking to him, because that would reflect well on them both.
Harry seemed to be occupied with them to eat an entire treacle tart by himself, which made Draco smile.
Harry must have known that everyone kept looking at the two of them, but he chose to ignore it, and Draco told himself he could do the same. People would stare and talk. Severus had prepared him for that. But it would end. They wouldn't necessarily remain the most interesting things in school for long.
And now, before you all retire to your beds, simply a few brief notices,
McGonagall said clearly.
Firstly, it is with great pleasure that I welcome Professor Lupin to our staff as the new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher.
There was a general quiet smattering of applause, but Draco and Harry clapped enthusiastically, as did the Weasley contingent on the far side of the hall. McGonagall smiled and continued.
Secondly, no magic is to be used between classes in the corridors. Thirdly, I would remind you all that the forest is forbidden to all pupils, and that students are not to be outside of their common rooms after curfew. But with that all said, it is time for you all to go to bed.
The prefects led the first years up, but Theo smiled at Draco.
You two can come back with us. There's me, Zabini, Goyle, and Crab in our dorm. And you two now, I guess.
Yeah, Draco swallowed. He remembered playing with Crab and Goyle a lifetime ago. Three of the other boys in his dorms had fathers who had served the Dark Lord, and that was frightening. But he trusted Severus to keep him safe. He followed Theo and three girls, Pansy and Daphne and Millie, back down to the dungeon. Theo showed them through to the boys' bedroom where six beds were waiting, their trunks before each of them. Draco felt exhausted, but he carefully grabbed a parchment quill from his trunk and scribbled off a short note.
Mother, I am Slytherin. All is well. I will write soon. Draco.
Far too exhausted to walk to the gallery, he sleepily cleared his throat.
Creature.
The house elf popped into visibility in front of him, bowing deeply.
Yes, young Master Draco.
Could you take this to my mother? I need to sleep.
He handed the note over and smiled at the elf before yawning. Creature disappeared and Harry wrapped around Draco.
Tired. I'm tired too, Draco agreed.
He got into his pyjamas and then made his way over to Harry. He was aware of his mother's new letter in his trunk, but there was no rush to read that, and he was very tired. Harry had changed into his own pyjamas and put Snake into his tank, which had been beside his bed. He leaned his staff against it and held out his arms for Draco. Draco climbed in beside him, smiling.
We did it, he whispered.
It felt amazing, almost unbelievable. But here they were, at Hogwarts, with friends and a chance to study magic. Draco yawned and cuddled up closer to Harry, still thinking about the feast. The ceiling of the Great Hall had been amazing, and he'd been right. The Great Hall was much less scary when there were children there. Harry's fingers mapped over his mark, and Harry's magic settled protectively over the two of them. Harry's glowing green eyes stared at Draco fondly.
Happy?
Yeah, Draco agreed, yawning again. He was full and exhausted, and he had Harry, so he wasn't afraid to go to sleep. He was in the Slytherin dungeons where he'd always dreamed of being, and what he felt like he belonged to.
Really happy. You?
Safe, Harry answered. Here, with Draco and Snape, and happy, and safe. He smiled. My Draco.
Yeah, Draco mumbled, half asleep. My Harry.
5 years and 3 months later. There's no Potter memorial on Godric's Hollow marking the passing of two young lives to save their son. Their sacrifice still mattered. It still changed everything. But it wasn't until 8 years later that it had an impact. Instead, in King's Cross there's a statue. It shows two little boys holding hands. One of them is pale, dressed in what appears to be a dressing gown, holding the hand of another boy who stands a little forward of him. The other boy is darker, leaning on a walking staff. He is barefoot. Muggles argue about the meaning, saying it represents diversity or is linked to Peter Pan, or is simply about a journey. Given that it is located in a train station, a journey seems likely. Students spill out from the hidden platform. Two boys barely glance at the statue, kissing briefly before they rush over to the point where a scarred man is waiting with his dog. The dog, going a little grey around the muzzle, bounces and rushes forwards, jumping up on the shorter boy and nearly knocking the staff he holds from his hands. He licks his face while the man embraces the taller boy and smiles proudly at the head boy badge on his chest.
Your mother's going to come over for you, Remus tells him,
and Draco smiles softly, reaching for Harry's hand. For a couple of weeks they'll be back with their family, and then carry on for the rest of their final year, while Remus and Sirius enjoy their sabbatical and the chance for independence it offers the boys. The future stretches ahead, but they've got each other. Some of the younger students look their way, murmuring and gesturing to Muggle parents at the statue and at them, but the boys ignore it. Harry gathers Sirius up into his arms, and Draco and Remus hold onto him and each other, and they apparate home.
The End. You've been listening to More Powerful Than Experience, written by Flight and Flame and read by Rivery Pye. If you have enjoyed this story, please visit archiveofourown.org/works/39560841 to leave kudos and feedback for Flight and Flame. Many thanks to Flight and Flame for giving permission to share this recording, and thank you for listening.